Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
Red knights at the round table, we dance where we're able. We'll routine to call the scenes to put quick in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and scram a lot. Red knights at the round table, our shows are more mid-table. So many times we give them rhymes that are quite unsingable. We're off to mad in Camelot, we sing from the diaphragm alone.
I have to push the pram along.
Well, on second thought, let's not go to Camelot.
Sam, sorry.
It is a silly place.
What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice.
And how'd you get that, eh?
By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh, how'd you do?
How'd you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
Well, that's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings?
Well, how'd you become king, then?
The Lady of the Lake, her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite, held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds, distributing swords, is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
Oh, but you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
I mean, if I went round saying I was an emperor just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they'd put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh. Come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help! Help! I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway! Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
He, he seizes the turbo. All those who are king seizes the turbo and the knights of the round table.
If I were the devil, if I were the prince of darkness, I'd want to engulf the whole world in darkness, and I'd have a third of its real estate and four-fifths of its population, but I wouldn't be happy until I had seized the ripest apple on the tree, thee. So I'd set about however necessary to take over the United States. I'd subvert the churches first. I'd begin with a campaign of whispers. With the wisdom of a serpent, I would whisper to you as I whispered to Eve. Do as you please. To the young, I would whisper that the Bible is a myth. I would convince them that man created God instead of the other way around. I would confide that what's bad is good and what's good is square. and the old I would teach to pray after me, our Father, which art in Washington. And then I'd get organized. I'd educate authors in how to make lurid literature exciting so that anything else would appear dull and uninteresting. I'd threaten TV with dirtier movies and vice versa. I'd peddle narcotics to whom I could. I'd sell alcohol to ladies and gentlemen of distinction. I'd tranquilize the rest with pills. If I were the devil, I'd soon have families at war with themselves, churches at war with themselves, and nations at war with themselves until each in its turn was consumed. And with promises of higher ratings, I'd have mesmerizing media fanning the flames. If I were the devil, I would encourage schools to refine young intellects, but neglect to discipline emotions. Just let those run wild. Until before you knew it, you'd have to have drug-sniffing dogs and metal detectors at every schoolhouse door. Within a decade, I'd have prisons overflowing. I'd have judges promoting pornography. Soon I could evict God from the courthouse, then from the schoolhouse, and then from the houses of Congress. And in his own churches, I would substitute psychology for religion and deify science. I would lure priests and pastors into misusing boys and girls and church money. If I were the devil, I'd make the symbol of Easter an egg and the symbol of Christmas a bottle. If I were the devil, I'd take from those who have and give to those who wanted until I had killed the incentive of the ambitious. And what'll you bet? I couldn't get whole states to promote gambling as the way to get rich. I would caution against extremes in hard work, in patriotism, in moral conduct. I would convince the young that marriage is old-fashioned, that swinging is more fun, that what you see on TV is the way to be. And thus I could undress you in public, and I could lure you into bed with diseases for which there is no cure. In other words, if I were the devil, I'd just keep right on doing what he's doing. Paul Harvey.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. There's battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speak in their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Every time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. A thousand people in the street singing songs and carrying signs, mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Into your life it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop now, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. We better stop.
His name is Dobry, and most people would see him as a scruffy old man. When I heard his story, I learned something important about judging people by their appearance. This old homeless man can show you what it's like to be a hero. He doesn't have much, but he possesses compassion that is more valuable than any pile of gold. When you see what the 99-year-old does every day, you'll realize that superheroes are real. They just aren't who you think they are. And here's the proof. See this old man? Here's why he's one of the best people in the world. This is 99-year-old Dobry Dobrev, a man who lost most of his hearing in the Second World War. He spent decades traveling 25 kilometers by foot every day, decked in his homemade clothes and leather shoes, from his village to the city of Sofia, Bulgaria, where he spends the day begging for money. Strangely enough, Dobrev isn't begging for himself. He manages to live with an 80 euros pension, roughly 100 US dollars a month. All the money that he has collected over the years, an estimated 40,000 euros, have been donated by him to orphanages unable to pay their bills. He doesn't keep a cent of the money he receives. Everything is for the orphanages. Some call him the Saint of Belovo, his place of birth. This year, he will be 100 years old. As one might expect, he's cherished by everybody. They call him Diado Dobry, Grandpa Dobry, and he represents the good that can be done in the most selfless way possible. So, if you're in need of a role model, here's one. Just by being a little bit like him, the world will be a much better place. He could have used the money for his own selfish reason. He didn't have to spend his days on the streets. But he does, just so he can give all of his money to children without families. Thank you, Dobry, for everything you've done.
From homeless people sleeping on the streets to people living in disgusting conditions, we take a look at 10 of the most homeless cities in the world. Number 10. Athens. Homelessness in Greece has significantly increased to 20,000 homeless people in recent years. About 50% of the homeless population roams the streets of Athens. A high rate of homelessness in this, the home of Aristotle and Plato, is largely down to the aggressive recession that hit Greece during the global financial crisis. The recession hit the country hard, reducing its gross domestic product by as much as 25% and causing unemployment rates to soar to 27%. Number 9. San Francisco. The Coalition on Homelessness reported that 10,373 people were housed in emergency shelters in San Francisco in 2013. The Homeless Advocacy Association aims at reducing this number over the next few years. It was formed in 1987 and created an ingenious way to end homelessness, printing and distributing a magazine, which they called the Street Sheet, to the homeless to sell. Today, they print 17,000 copies of this newspaper, which actually is the longest constantly running newspaper of its kind in North America. Number 8. Boston. Boston is the third major city in the U.S. with the highest number of homeless people. It also has the highest number of people living in emergency shelters, 16,540 to be precise. According to surveys, up to 25% of the homeless have jobs, but these jobs do not pay enough to fund a roof over their heads. The director of the Emergency Shelter Commission for the Boston Public Health Commission states that the city has one of the highest family homelessness rates due to the high cost associated with housing in Boston. Number 7. Buenos Aires. Buenos Aires has an estimated 15,000 homeless people. Sadly, 30% are children and 13% are elderly. The city provides shelters for the destitute, but it can only shelter a maximum of 1,700 people. The number of those without a roof over their heads is growing, and their chances of gaining employment are dwindling. Reasons as to why people end up homeless in Argentina are vague. Number 6. Mumbai. Mumbai has a population of almost 12.5 million. Over half of these residents live in one of the many thousands of slums in Mumbai. 25,000 of these people are broke and on the streets. Lack of affordable housing, job loss, attrition of family support, inadequate income, substance abuse, disability, and domestic violence are the leading causes of homelessness in Mumbai. Number 5. Jakarta. The homelessness phenomenon began with the reign of the tyrant general Suharto. Suharto instituted policies that oppressed the locals. His administration would grab land that was privately held under the pretense of development. However, the land was only used to enrich the government. This, in turn, pushed many people into the streets. The number has continued to grow over the years. In 2013, killer floods shattered the homes of over 100,000 people, adding that number to the total homeless people in the city. Number 4. Mexico City. Mexico City is home to over 30,000 homeless people. A disturbing 50% of these are children, and poverty is the main reason so many children do not have a roof over their heads. One major effect of poverty is family breakdown and physical abuse. Many children prefer to run away from their homes for fear that arguments between their parents will become violent. Some leave at this point, while others leave after a physical abuse incident. Number 3. Moscow. 3.4% of the population in Russia is homeless. Tens of thousands of the homeless population is in Moscow. Researchers place the number of homeless people in Russia at 1.5 to 3 million. Homelessness in this country has been the norm since World War II. Yuri, who has spent over 15 years on the streets, says he lost his house at the age of 29 upon his father's death. Yuri's sister sold the house and threw him out. Today, he lives with other homeless people at a train station and has $15 a day to survive. Number 2. Los Angeles. The streets of Los Angeles are home to over 57,000 destitute people. The majority are male and single, and half of these homeless people are African American, despite the fact that the black population only accounts for 9% of LA's total population. 31% of LA's homeless abuse drugs, while 18% are disabled physically. Their average age is 40. Although the women tend to be younger, 25% are also reported to have a mental illness. Number 1. New York City. There are 60,352 people without a roof over their heads in the Big Apple. This number includes 25,640 children, 22,386 are adults, and over 12,326 are single. These numbers have continued to rise steadily, regardless of the campaign promises by the new mayor, Bill de Blasio. De Blasio's plan was to shelter homeless families away from the usual cluster sites. Although Bill's administration was trying to move them into permanent houses, it is proving hard to fight the stubborn cluster site problem. Check out our other videos and remember to hit the subscribe button.
Is it a comforting place? Is it a fresh meal? Or is it simply a feeling of security? However, what if you didn't have these material wants or emotional stability? What if you were homeless? According to the Homeless World Cup, there is an estimate of 100 million people who are homeless worldwide. Homelessness is defined by the International Encyclopedia of Social Science as a condition of which an individual is detached from the bonds of society of a social and economic standpoint. Homelessness impacts society and those who are living in these unimaginable conditions, but through analyzing these states, homelessness can be identified as a worldly and ethical issue. Today, we will investigate homelessness in the continents of Australia, Europe, and North America. As stated by the Homeless World Cup, over 100,000 people sleep on the streets every day in the continent of Australia, and about 20,000 of those people live in the continent's largest city of Sydney. In Europe, Homeless World Cup has stated that 3 million people are homeless. Just within the past 5 years, many of those homeless were discovered to be families, women, and youth. According to a collection of sources from World Bank, University of Southern California, and Homeless World Cup, there are over 15 million homeless in North America. Nearly 3.5 million of those 15 million homeless live in the United States, and some even live right here in Charleston. Upon more research, it was discovered that many around the world become homeless because of the lack of employment, family issues, and unstable mental health. With those thoughts in mind, interviews were completed with the local homeless in hopes that these findings could support the International Encyclopedia of Social Sciences claims.
You are homeless, correct?
Yes.
How many years have you been homeless in Charleston?
About 3.
Okay. See the future for yourself. How are you going to try to get out? It sucks. How are you going to improve your life, though?
Got to quit drinking eventually.
Okay. Are you homeless in Charleston?
Yeah, I'm homeless.
Okay. How did you get here? How did you become homeless?
I lived in Virginia for 10 years.
Uh-huh.
And then I came back here.
Yeah. Did you just fall on hard times or the economy?
My mom and dad died.
Okay.
And then I had nowhere to live.
Okay.
As one can see, the face of homelessness is all around the globe and touches millions of lives. However, as a society, we can help these individuals by allowing organizations to intervene. These organizations can help build housing, which leads to employment opportunities. According to Share International, these happenings have already been a positive impact on those in Brazil, Chile, and Indonesia, just to name a few. Nevertheless, these positive results cannot hide the ethical dilemmas of homelessness. As stated by Vincent Ryan Ruggiero, there is no magic majority view, and often these views are filled by emotion, not objectivity. This is very much true in the case of homelessness, because emotions help support the idea of providing for the homeless, while the opposing majority view uses reason for supporting their standpoint. While one tries to combat the ethical issue of homelessness on a small scale or tackle it globally while traveling to Australia, Europe, or North America, you can make a difference because positive actions are impactful.
Listening to the Knights of the Round Table at www.shazoozradio.com. If you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html there, where you'd have access to not one, but 3 separate chat rooms. Woohoo! So, didn't post any videos over there at the chat room today. Just posted one word, homeless. And, this is something that I guess I just can't understand. You know, in a world that we live in, that we've been blessed with so much abundance and everything, I can't wrap my mind around why it is that people in this world can't have their own place, home to go, their own safety, their own comfort zone, so to speak, that a place to call home, a place to hang your hat, that kind of deal. I did something really crazy last night. I had a get-together out here on my property, and we had a lot of fun, and had a little bit of a party and everything like that. And when it was all said and done, and everybody went on about their business and went to sleep and all that kind of stuff, I decided I'm going to do something out of the ordinary. I'm going to stay out here tonight. And it was really cold out there. My wife, she kind of got angry with me, but she brought me two thin blankets out there. So I was a 52-year-old man sleeping out by the campfire overnight. I knew I was going to be all right. You know, it's not something I had to do. It's just something I just wanted to do. And so while I'm out here trying to stay warm and thinking about the world and life in general, I got to thinking about, you know, it's winter time coming on, and there's a lot of people out there, probably in my area, you know, probably in the state that I live in. They probably ain't got a home to go to, and how they would actually be able to survive through the night. When I woke up this morning, there was literally frost on the picnic table. I mean, it really got cold. I stayed warm on by the campfire. Had to get up a couple times in the middle of the night and throw some logs on the fire and such. But nonetheless, it was an experience for a 52-year-old guy to be kind of staying out there in the cold. See, I got this arthritis thing going on, and so, you know, it's not really comfortable sleeping on a lawn chair out in the freezing weather. But it was all self-inflicted, you know, so, you know, I did it all to myself. But it gave me some insight. You know, I've never been homeless. I was raised up in a poor family, so I know what it's like to go without food. And so I have a profound respect for all the blessings every time I get a meal given to me by anyone, you know. I really appreciate that. And I appreciate it more deeply than probably most people even pay attention to on themselves, because you get blessed all the time. If you're fortunate enough to be able to listen to this radio show, then as far as I'm concerned, you're one of the blessed. Not because it's a great radio show or anything, but because you got that access, you know. You got an opportunity to either sit there in your home or whatever, and you got a place to go, whatever. There's folks out there in the world, all over the world. It's mind-blowing to see how many people they say is actually out there who is homeless. Unfortunately, I don't know how to fix it. I don't know what to do in order to make people not homeless. You know, do I start a charity? Do I try to raise funds and try to get houses for people? I don't know. I guess the only thing I have option right now is just to kind of talk about it here and hope that somebody hears it and has a better idea than I got. There's a lot of people out there doing a lot of good things, you know, trying to work to resolve homelessness. But there's also people out there that I feel are taking advantage of homeless people. Some people even out there basically making a mockery of being homeless. You know, there's a lot of social experiments that people put on YouTube. One of them says poison, food, or money options. Homeless experiment, social experiment. And the homeless man versus the homeless child social experiment. There's a lot of them. One video talks about giving a random homeless man $10,000. That's nice, I guess. Feeding the homeless on 4th July. Hot girl versus homeless child social experiment. And it goes on. There's one that the homeless billionaire prank. I don't understand the mindset of people. I really don't. I wish somebody could explain this to me. There's videos out there of fakest homeless people who got exposed. And it has a girl on the front of it says, need dollars for clothes. Looks like she might be naked behind a sign. So, I don't get it. Honestly don't get it. There's one homeless child, it says, a homeless child just wanted to die, but then that happened. And something, I don't know, I didn't even watch the video. I just can only speculate. And there are so many different, look it on YouTube, go just click on it, go look out there and see some of the things that people do. You know, a good book that I subscribe to, it said, as it were, in the days of Noah, so shall it be in the days of the coming of the Son of Man. And when I see the world in the state of affairs that it's actually in today, I'm kind of wondering, are we in those days? You know, if you got a big heart, it's hard to look out there at the world and see things like that. It's hard to see people doing without. It's hard to see people doing things to each other. You know, people are out there doing good. Some people are out there raising money for homeless people. Some people are out there trying to put programs together to build them houses. There's people out there who've actually built them tiny houses. I think that together as a society, we should be able to come together and figure out a way to ensure that everyone has a sanctuary. You know, if I was a millionaire, I'd go out in every state, in every place that I possibly could, and I'd buy up little sections of land and get volunteers to go out there and build them houses and stuff. And I even got to thinking about that as well. How long would it be before the human condition actually took what would have been something wonderful and turned it into something bad? Some drug dealer moves up into the homeless place and just makes it miserable for everybody. I just don't get it. I honestly don't get it. You know? I don't want to be a negative naysayer or, you know, I believe in dreams come true. I believe in possibilities. But this is such a touchy subject to me. It just drives me insane. Barbara in the chat room said tens of thousands of vets are homeless. And probably more. 5 million homes have been foreclosed on since 2008. Man, that's and think about that number, 5 million. That's a lot of families out of a house. That's sad. The governments of the world, they waste more money in one day than you and I would ever probably see in a lifetime. I looked at some of the price tags of some of the weaponry that they use in different wars and skirmishes around the world. Heck, for one bomb, you could buy probably a couple thousand tiny houses or something, and at least give them a warm place to sleep. I'm 52 years old. I got arthritis. I'm probably not in the best of health anyway, but I spent the night out in the freezing cold next to the fire. As long as I was cuddled up close to that fire, I was doing fine. A lot of homeless folks don't have the option to build a campfire. Some of them laying in the sidewalks up against the buildings out of the wind best they can, and maybe some of them just laying in the dirt somewhere. How could anybody in this world see one of their brothers or sisters out there laying in these conditions, sleeping under cardboard or on park benches or wherever, it's sad. Stephen Gibbons tapped in the chat room, all down to one massive problem, an elephant in the room everyone ignores and would solve the homeless problem and thousands of others, the financial system and the way that they create money. Heck yeah, well, you know, like they pretty much just got an unlimited budget, and I just, maybe they could just create it out of thin air and give somebody a house. You know, during the housing crisis, they bailed the banks out. The banks not only got to foreclose on the people, but they also got money from the government, and then they got to resell the houses. It was a scam. It was the biggest sham in the history of shams. And it to me, it was disgusting. Why would you want your brothers and sisters to be out there in the road? I don't get it. I honestly don't get it. You know, when I have some of these conversations, I actually have people that tell me I'm standing on a soapbox preaching to the choir. I don't get that either. I'm just expressing what I feel about certain things that are going on in the world. There are certain things I don't even know what's really going on in the world, honestly, because I'm really not, I really don't go far away from home anymore. But everything that I've been told from the media and from the YouTube and the internet is that there's a lot of people out there suffering. And I wished I could figure out a way to fix it. It's just my little experiment of sleeping out in the cold and waking up and the frost everywhere. I don't know what temperature it actually starts to frost outside, but it's cold enough that if you don't have blankets, you're in for a rough go overnight. I had blankets, and I could have got up any time, and I could have went inside my house. I wasn't homeless, and I wasn't in any jeopardy. I was just really cold. But there's individuals out there that don't have that option. I'd like to figure out a way to give them that option. I'd like to figure out a way to spread a ripple out there across this world and get people to recognize the need. You know, we're just talking about one subject. Homelessness comes along with a lot of other subjects. It's like Barbara mentioned in there that there's a lot of homeless veterans that have come back from war and they're living in the literal hell without even a home to go to. And there's health issues and mental health issues and food issues. You know, and even in the homeless community, people will have to make choices to go out and steal or whatever to try to get food. That really saddens my heart. That shouldn't be something that we hear about. There's got to be some sort of solution out there. You know, the Knights of the Round Table isn't just a squawk box. It's a place to come here and bring ideas to the table and resolve issues and send these ideas and issues out to the world and try to get all the honorable knights to go out there in their own communities and try to do something positive for the world. I have no problem reaching in my pocket and giving somebody in need some money to buy some food. You know, doesn't make me any better of a person than anybody else. I'm not trying to toot my own horn, but I do like to help people out when I can because, you know, I got a heart. And I believe everybody else out there has one as well. How do we get a message to the governments of the world and find a cure for homelessness once and for all. You know, I've heard some really rotten people come up with some really rotten solutions about homelessness. I've heard all the people that say all the negativity about, oh, well, you know, you give that man food or money for food, he's just going to go out and buy liquor and drugs, and or he's just too lazy to work, or, you know, all that kind of stuff. The reason why this world is the way it is because this world is so incredibly jaded. It's so incredibly disturbed. People, you can't even stop and pick nobody up these days that's walking on the side of the road for fear that they might be an axe murderer. That's what people believe. People believe the homeless person's going to steal from them, they're going to hurt them or whatever. The mainstream media has pretty much put out every bit of issue to make people afraid. Afraid to help their brothers and sisters. And there's even places in this world that we hear that you get arrested for trying to feed the homeless. You get arrested for trying to feed the hungry. And Barbara said in there, there is a bigger picture here. Mental illness is a huge part of homelessness. There are homeless that do not suffer mental illness. They're just down on their luck. And she's right. People have fallen through the cracks of society. Somehow or another, you know, I was one of the lucky people out there. I was blessed with a home. You know, never been homeless. I was raised poor. I honestly really was. I know what it's like to eat things like butter sandwiches and split pea soup and you know, wonder when your next meal was coming in. And so I know what it was. I know what it's like to go through hard times. I didn't live through the Great Depression like some of the folks that are a little bit older than I have. But I do understand because, you know, I was born in 1965 and things weren't always that great back then as well. You know, there were hard times. People had to work and, you know, jobs were out there, but, you know, you had to be able to get there. My mom literally pushed two kids and a grocery cart from the store all the way home and then had to bring the grocery cart all the way back to the store again in the snow. So that makes, what, three trips, four trips? one to the store originally, one to get the food that you can afford, and push two kids back to the house, and then take the grocery cart back, and then come back home again. And ironically enough, I had a bum dad who had a vehicle at the time that could have driven her to the store, but he didn't. And so there are a lot of single moms out there, and even single dads out there that have fallen on hard times, and you know, they find themselves can't afford their rent. And have you seen the prices to rent a building these days? It's insanity. You know, every time I hear somebody talk about how they pay $600 a month or more for rent an apartment and that kind of stuff, I'm like, man, there's somebody out there playing Monopoly getting filthy, stinking rich. You know, it's just, if the world is as bad as it appears, I got some real concerns. I need to figure out a way that I can do something. You know, I'm so fortunate. I'm so incredibly blessed. I live like a king compared to some people. You know, and I can't be ashamed for the way that I live, because I think I live a humble life. I think I'm helpful to others. I think I, you know, I bring people into my home all the time and give them a place to stay when they're falling on hard times. So I think I'm doing the right thing. But I don't know if it's enough. It's, you know, to scratch the surface. If you help people out, will they go out and they help somebody else out? And will they keep that pay it forward concept going? You know, I've had people help feed my family, and I've helped feed other families. I've had people, you know, do wonderful things for me, and I've tried to do wonderful things for other people. And I kind of was under the impression that that is what we, the people, the humans of the world, do. I know there's a lot of good people out there in this world. But let me scroll back up there in that chat over there on the TCT chat room side, because I want to look at them numbers again that Barbara posted on there. It's insanity is what it is. 5 million homes have been foreclosed since 2008. And farther up there was something about, 60,000 veterans or more sleeping on the streets. They went out and sacrificed themselves to for everybody else. You know, is there ever a time when we actually owe somebody something? When somebody goes out there and they put their life on the line and their sanity and their bodies, and then they come home to not only not have a home, but to be basically looked down upon as if less of a human. You know, there's a lot of, Stephen Gibbons said in the chat room, so he was answering something, I think. He said, yeah, it's a commie idea to look after the mentally ill or physically ill. Maybe because that could be you one day, or maybe because some humans have compassion and empathy and distress by distress of others. Nature must be a commie loving bigot for giving us such emotions. Yeah, that's brilliant. I mean, nature put it on my heart, you know. I honestly believe I was born this way. You know, maybe for a purpose that I'm, you know, I had to go through my trials and tribulations so that I didn't get arrogant and I had understanding of the world and I could have compassion for others. Because I have to wonder what would I have been like if I'd have been raised in a rich family with all the bells and whistles, so to speak. I'd be given everything, born with a silver spoon in my mouth, so to speak. But I was born in a poor family, to a family that had a loving heart, and so, you know, don't feel bad for me. I was taken care of. I was loved all my childhood. I had problems that, you know, just like everybody else, you know, I had trials and tribulations as a child that I had to contend with, but I always had a home to go to. Had a grandma and grandpa, I could go spend the night with them, and uncles and aunts, and my mom out working two jobs at one point, just trying to survive to get everything we needed for school and everything. So I've been blessed mostly because my mom had a big heart as well, and she did a whole lot for me and my brothers. I wrote her this thing and I gave it to her, and it brought tears to her eyes because I told her how much I loved her and how much I respected her and how much I honored her and all of her efforts for all of everything. And I told her there wasn't a better mom in this world. And I meant every little bit of it, because I watched my mom struggle through all those years. There are some folks out there that, not because of their own doing, but because of the society or financial situations, they find themselves falling further and further through the cracks of society. And then some people get in trouble with the law. And then from that one little trouble with the law, it seems like when you get in the system, you can't never get out of the system. The system is set not to help rehabilitate you, but to help keep you down. It's a sad thing. It's a really sad thing that you can't you can't make a mistake in this world and just bounce back. There are individuals out there who made a small mistake. Some of them made big mistakes, and when it was all said and done, they got into the system, and the system didn't care that they couldn't afford fines. They couldn't afford to pay the fines and pay for their grocery bills at the same time, or pay the fines and be able to afford their housing at the same time. And with all that, you know, you find yourself, you know, self-medicating, or, you know, they get on the drugs or alcohol, and things just keep dominoing from there. I have a cousin that literally, the only crime he ever committed was driving without a doggone driver's license, because he started off with a parking ticket, and he couldn't pay the parking ticket, and it dominoed. And they kept piling it on and piling it on and piling on until he was in such jeopardy, he couldn't get his driver's license back if he wanted to, but he still had to go to work, so he still drove, got himself in trouble many times for driving without a license, and, you know, his life went down a different path that it probably would have otherwise went had, you know, the system had never beat him down the way that they did. You don't look at the judge for understanding. Hey, look, judge, you're a person just like I am. You know, I'm falling on hard times. I've actually fell through the cracks of society. Is there any way possible that you can either work with me or cut me a break this time around, and I'll try to keep my act together? That ain't the way the court works. They say that ignorance is no excuse to the law, so if you make a mistake, you're going to pay for it. Financially, maybe even worse, maybe finally to the point where you just literally fall through the cracks of society like so many have. And if you got veterans that come back and they're sleeping on the bench, and then they get picked up for vagrancy, you know, the vagrancy comes with a fine as well. Heck, they might even be glad you arrested them, so they got a jailhouse to sleep in, and maybe they get a chance for a meal and a blanket. And that, come on, people. It's hard. Hi, Barbara. How you doing? Can you hear me?
It just is. I'm always muted at first. How are you? Oh, you know, this is a really, this topic is really hard. You know, I was realizing that it's a shame, America's shame about the homeless vets. And homelessness, period, is shameful, you know?
Yeah.
There should be no homelessness. There should be no starving people in this day. But here we are. And Stephen just put in another statistic. 39,471 veterans are homeless on any given night. And then I'm sure those statistics may be more, you know.
Yeah, there's probably a lot that didn't get recognized. They just, most folks just kind of walk by and look at them like it's just a bum, you know.
Well, I think there's I popped in a link, public agenda. Files on homelessness, and in that link there is a chapter on the limits of compassion, and I said, what? How can you put a limit on compassion?
Well, I don't know, but I talk myself into an emotional state sometimes when I bring these subjects up. You know, I got a big
Absolutely.
heart. I can't help it.
Well, I think the homeless are mostly not on people's minds because, well, I think today especially there is so much struggle that people are experiencing, just, you know, trying to survive themselves, you know, the way our lives have turned into during this time, you know, what the taxes, the low-paying jobs, the food, high cost of food, you know, all these situations, circumstances, make it really difficult for the common people. I'm saying the common people. I'm not talking about the wealthy. You common people, you know, us.
Yep.
To stretch out a hand, reach out a hand for others, you know. It's not like, it's not so easy. Certainly the wealthy are not concerned about the homeless.
Well,
they're just not.
Last night, I slept outside. I mean, it was of my own, on my own doing. So I'm not asking for any kind of, you know, recognition for that. I just did it just to see what that night would be like, you know, because I've never been homeless. But when I woke up in the morning, there was literal frost on the picnic table. I slept on a one of those reclining old yard chairs or whatever, lawn chairs.
Yeah.
And my wife, she kind of got angry at me last night because she knows I'm 52 years old and it's going to get really cold outside. And she thought I was going to die out there and she's going to be concerned all night. So she brought me two blankets out there. But as I'm laying there, you know, trying to stay warm as close to the fire as I could get without setting myself on fire, I got to thinking about people out there. Some folks don't have blankets.
And they don't have a fire.
Yeah, and they can't put a fire out there on the sidewalk because they'll get thrown in jail, which maybe that might be the best case for them to get thrown in jail.
I don't know.
Well, I mean,
don't really know. You know, there's a big issue. I've read little bits and pieces over the years about the homeless. Why don't people say, well, there's shelters for them. Why don't they go to the shelters? And then you read what the homeless people say because they're robbed in the shelters.
Yeah.
Or they're assaulted in the shelters, especially women with a child or a woman alone, or even men, you know, if you're an older man and, you know, you don't have, you know, a home and you're out on the street, they don't want to go to the shelters because things happen in those shelters.
Well, I can understand that too. You know, me personally, I think I would go to the jailhouse and say, hey, look, lock me up, man. You know, I need some place to sleep. It's cold out here. I don't know.
Do you know, I read an article years ago about men in prison. Some men. There's a percentage that actually when they get out of prison, they wind up homeless, no food, no shelter, nothing, no job, and they decide they go back to prison.
Yeah. Right? I've actually heard that. Heard that there's actual statistics out there that some people, when they get in there and they've been in there for years, they just can't cope outside and they'll literally go out and commit another crime just to get themselves thrown back in.
That's right. I mean, that's pretty sad. It's a sad state of affairs that,
yes, it is,
that there's no help to to acclimate the people, to help them, no opportunities, you know. So there they are. Hopeless again, helpless, and back around they go into the system, and then people complain about the money that's spent in the prisons, and I mean it's like madness, you know.
Well, one would think that, you know, if you got foresight of knowing that there's a potential issue down there, you know, I heard this deal about in China. There are literally entire cities that were built, but nobody's allowed to stay there.
Right.
I don't understand that.
What is that?
Yeah. I don't understand that. I mean, they got a one-child policy supposedly over there, and, you know, there's a whole entire city, and nobody can go stay there because they're all crowded into other places or whatever. But there's a lot of buildings throughout the entire United States that are abandoned that, you know, maybe a little bit of repair or maintenance or whatever could actually be turned into a place to go.
But right.
I also mentioned what you kind of mentioned there a second ago about, you know, how some people are afraid to go to these shelters because they get robbed in them.
Yeah. Or beat up or assaulted.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting to me, there was an article, I don't know if I posted it, but the domestic violence is one of the major causes of homelessness regarding women and their children.
Man.
You know, but I remember, I live in the country. I've lived here all my life, upstate New York, about 100 miles from New York City. So I never spent a lot of time in New York. But I think, I can't remember, it must have been over 20-some years ago. I went to New York for a couple times. I used to go then take classes down there at one of the colleges, and I had to ride the subway, which was terrifying to me, but I managed to do it. But I started to see homeless people, and it was shocking to me, really shocking. I mean, it really hit my heart, really powerfully, and I was, like, shocked. Because you have all these people walking by, and someone there sitting on the street or wherever, you know, and they just have a little sign or something, help me, I need food or I need a job or something.
Yeah.
And mostly what I saw were men, young men, older men, elder men. And then it wasn't long after that, I started to see more women, and I mean elderly women, with their shopping carts filled with whatever they had of their own little possessions, walking around the streets or standing in an alleyway.
Well,
it became even more shocking to me, heartbreaking.
Well, I'm 52 years old. I know there's a lot of people older than I am, but nonetheless, as 52 years old with a few health problems of my own, and you know, having arthritis and that kind of stuff, I'm literally sitting here in my chair underneath the blanket, and I still got that chill from being out being chilled, if you understand what I'm saying. I'm still cold.
And I know what you mean.
The older bodies, we can't regulate our temperature as well as
right.
Somebody might be younger that might have been asleep out there and everything's just fine. And for the elderly to be out there, you know, in the cold, It's a harder goal for somebody, you know, in my condition. I don't want anybody to feel sorry for me. Don't get me wrong. I put that on myself, but I did it because I just needed to know. I needed to experience that. So I stayed out all night. I slept by the fire. I picked the worst night to do it because literally, like I said, when I woke up in the morning, there was frost. I mean everywhere. So it must have really seriously got cold.
And you have no stove. You can't make a pot of tea.
Nope.
Right. You can't cook oatmeal. What do you do then? You know. I mean, it's really unimaginable, and
yeah.
I don't think people want to go there. People don't want to go there because there seems to be a lack of empathy. You know, and like that whole question. You know. How can you a limit on compassion? Like people, I didn't read that article I popped in, but I think it's about specifically New York City and the people who are dealing, who live there, people who have homes,
yeah.
who live there and every day pass by homeless people or who feel guilty. That's a big thing, you know, guilty because we should feel guilty. But nobody wants to feel guilty, so who's making us feel guilty? It's that homeless person over there, you know? So they get annoyed, they get angry, they get disgusted, some. And so there's this, you know, this question or this conversation about how people feel in New York City about the homeless. Like you were saying earlier, there's laws being put out now that you can't feed the homeless. You can't give the homeless money. You can't help a homeless person. And some people say, yeah, that's good because they're just, you know, bloodsuckers and they should get a job or something.
Yeah, that's terrible. You know,
there's all kinds of people, you know, as humans, we don't want to deal with heavy emotions. You know, we avoid it.
Yeah.
And then some can put that aside and wade right into the issue and start doing something
yeah.
that they to reach out to help someone, another human being. I think a lot of people, I don't know where this comes from, about how they don't see homeless people as a human being. You know?
It's kind of like that, out of sight, out of mind concept. If you put this in the back of your mind and you don't look at them as if they're real, then you don't concern yourself with it. You know, it's not my problem. It's not in my backyard.
And what can I do? I've got my own stuff to deal with.
Yeah, I got my own problems. Hey, I'm not telling everybody go out there and sell your house and give it to the poor. I'm telling everybody do whatever you think you can, even if you think you can't.
Well, what does that take, though? You see, here's the piece, what I'm trying to figure out, because I gave money to, I was overwhelmed, and I felt, you know, deep sadness and shock, and so I would hand some money to this person there sitting on the sidewalk, all bundled up or whatever, asking for help. You know, and then people would say, don't give them money because they'll just go get alcohol. They'll just go get drunk. Yeah. How can you say that about everyone? Maybe some of them would, but I don't know. It's just my question is, where is the heart of people? How numb have we become in this day and age?
Apparently,
and what is the
bad.
What is the source of that numbness, you know? And how can we allow human beings, to children too, old people, women, children, men, veterans, how could this be? You know, it's a big shame. It's a shame in this day.
One of the parts about my experience that I didn't mention was that not only was there frost on the picnic table, but the two thin blankets that I did have out there when I woke up in the morning, they were wet from the dew because I was sitting close to the fire.
Right.
Of course, you know, that's kind of counterproductive to staying warm, you know, but I had the luxury of two blankets. I also had the luxury that at any given minute I could have walked a few, you know, yards up the path and got into a warm bed with blankets and pillows and such, you know, and I could have been comfortable. But there are folks out there that don't have that option.
I told the story on your show a while back. I don't know if you remember it. It is a documentary, and I tried to find it. But this woman in Brooklyn, she was a working woman, had some money. You know, she wasn't wealthy. But she used to shop at this little corner green market there, and I don't know if you've ever been to New York, but they usually extend their market out onto the sidewalk with a, you know, like tarp covering, and they have their fruits out there and boxes of all whatevers, and filled with stuff. And she used to shop there, and it was on the wedged in between the building, the actual building, and this and the sidewalk was this Japanese man. He lived there. That was his little place. The people who owned the green market allowed him to be there. He set it up like a little space outside on the sidewalk. It wasn't warm, but he had tarps. He had little, you know, he had crates and cardboard boxes and whatever, and he had all his belongings, whatever he had, there in that little space. You know, I don't even know how big it was. Maybe the size of a almost like a closet, I guess. But she began to notice that he had his little watercolor paintings hanging outside with clothespins on the tarp overhang, and she started talking to him, and she got friendly with him, and she bought a couple of his paintings, and over a couple of years this went on. She talked to him, and no, you know, nothing too personal, but there you go. And she bought a couple of his paintings to help him out. And I guess it was finally she reached a point where winter was coming. It was very bitter cold. And she got really concerned and really, at that point, just couldn't stand it anymore, I guess. And she decided to invite him to her apartment for that, you know, period of time where the winter was really brutal, you know, not thinking anything more than that, you know. And he came to her apartment, and she got to know him more. It turns out he was in the Japanese internment camps as a young person, but he was actually a professor.
Wow.
And his whole family, you know, was gone, and he under circumstances that are out of our hands, he became a homeless person in the streets of New York City. And he had a story to tell. And the more she got to know him, the longer he stayed in her apartment. It's a beautiful documentary, you know, but it's about two people in this circumstance trying to be living together for that period of time. It's not easy. It was a huge challenge. So the documentary showed these little ups and downs and the compassions and caring and stories and connectedness, you know. And she started to reach out to, you know, different organizations to see if she could get him housed somewhere and help him. And the whole documentary is really about this and about his internment, the story of the internment and his loss of his family and his downfall into homelessness and how he was once a professor. He, you know, of course he was a beautiful artist. And eventually she found him a place. They got assistance in a place where he, you know, lived then, and they became very close friends. He had his own place finally, and he became a teacher in that little community where a lot of other people lived, teaching them to paint. And he was happy. He became in other people's eyes, you know, just another human being who was helping others, teaching them, and he was also being helped. And it was a huge and beautiful story, you know.
Yeah.
It takes just one person.
Well, one person, right? Yeah, I'm sitting here scrolling through some videos about homeless stories, and there's one headline that says homeless painter reunites with long lost son, and just maybe two down, there's a story, American story, Tent City, USA. A homeless community faces eviction from land that they occupy, that they're occupying.
Yeah,
and man. You know,
yeah.
There's so much land that is locked up by the government that, you know, if you was to take and go out there and distribute at least a quarter of an acre to so many different people and allow them to, you know, at the very least, put a tent on a doggone thing, you know, help them out.
Well, what about the empty buildings?
Yeah.
Blocks and blocks of empty buildings. You know, take some of the money from the war chest from the war games,
yeah,
put it towards helping the people.
Have you seen the price tags on some of the weapons, the bombs that they drop?
No, I don't want to.
Thousands of dollars per,
only thousands.
Well, some of them in the million range.
It's disgusting, isn't it?
And
yeah. People are starving, and people are homeless, and they're building mother of all bombs
for
millions of dollars.
Mother of all bombs. And I'm thinking, you know, the way the system's set up, the government punishes people for being down on their luck and being homeless. You can be arrested for vagrancy. You can be arrested for feeding the hungry. And, you know, mostly is because where these people end up is like in front of businesses, like restaurants or something like that. And the restaurant owners think it's bad for business to have people out there giving homeless people free food because they don't want their patrons to have to see that when they're coming through to go to have a meal. Which, to me, they ought to see that.
They ought to see it, but I have to tell you, it is a problem.
Yeah.
Because those people who have that kind of money to go to those fancy restaurants, they don't want to see that.
No, they don't. But they should have to see it. You know? And they should have to address it. I'm sorry, folks. I really am honestly sorry. I don't want you to feel guilty because you got food. I feel blessed.
I think you should feel guilty.
But
we should feel guilty. Well, come on. Yeah. I mean, that's why... But guilt is a difficult emotion. People don't want to feel guilt, so they'll do anything in their power to not feel guilty about something that's looking at them, staring them right in the face. Okay, some issue, some terrible thing that's happening, and people turn away from it because they don't want to feel, period. I think that's what I think.
I think what I was trying to say with that was to feel compassion. You know, if you're gonna, if you tend to finding yourself in a situation where you feel guilty, use it constructive and go out and do something, anything.
Well, you'd think that would be the right way, right? But you know, feel compassion. That means you have to do something.
Yeah.
That means you have to step out of your box, out of your comfort zone.
Years ago, I was working at a glass company, and I was driving down the road to come to a stop sign. And there was this girl on the side of the road, and she came up to me, and the words that came out of her mouth, it dropped my heart completely down to my feet. I'm telling you, I almost busted out bawling. All right, well, this girl come up there and offered me sex for food.
And oh, my God, yeah.
It's hard to talk about, but I was so incredibly disturbed by that. What I did was I told her, I said, look, I don't want that, but I'm going to go get you some money to get you some food, right? And I'll try to find some numbers to find, some help for you or whatever. I said, if you're here when I come back through, I will bring you some money. And I didn't have no money in my pocket. I was broke. And I actually went back to the shop and I borrowed some money from one of my coworkers. And I said, I'll get it back to you on payday. But I got to help this kid out. And she couldn't have been very old at all. But, you know, here's in the situation that she's at. I actually called a radio station and I talked to, this talk radio show. I was pretty much in tears. And I'm telling them, I can't understand why this is. I said, it breaks my heart that some young lady would have to offer herself like that for food in this country. I said, there's been many men and women that went out and fought and died for this country, and to have that flag, stand up so proud above, our nation, and yet here in our own nation, we've got these kind of situations going on. It's not right. And that was years ago, Barbara.
I feel that for my personal self, I feel that I don't, because they say, they'll just go out and buy a bottle, a bottle of alcohol, don't give them money, don't whatever. And I feel like, for myself, I cannot walk by or ignore a person standing there asking for help. I'm not going to go into that thinking of, well, they're going to go just get a bottle of it. I don't know if that person's going to do that. For me personally, it's just my character. I would give them my last dollar, and I've done that, and apologizing that I don't have any more. Because I just couldn't walk past or drive past a person standing, another human being, and start to make up a story. Well, they're just going to go get drunk, so I'm not going to help them. That's a story. I don't know if that's true.
Well, my perspective on that particular deal, and I understand what you're talking about because I've heard it so many times. My perspective is that even if that's what they do with it, I said that may be their only means of comfort in a world.
That's right.
And, I'm not going to deny them that.
Exactly. That's just what I mean. For me, I want to lend a hand, even if it's a small amount. I think it's the point I'm trying to make is to reach out and help another human being, not judge them, and not ignore them. Just talking to them, giving them whatever I have, and saying, how are you doing, and suggesting a couple places in the community where they could go and get food. And so I'm talking to a human being, human being to human being. I see so many people just walking by like there's a dead stump there instead of a human being.
Yep. Well, I had another kind of episode, a few months back or whatever. I was driving my car, went down to the VA to go for an appointment down there, and on the way down, I passed a guy that was standing there with a sign that he needed help. Well, I was in a hurry because I had to get to my appointment on time, and so I, passed him up, and then, all I had in my pocket was a $10 bill, right? And that was for gas to get me, to and from the VA. And so I go to this appointment, I get done with the appointment, I'm on my way back, and the same guy is still standing there, and I passed him a second time. And I couldn't have been a quarter mile down the road, and it hit me like a ton of bricks. I can't do this. And I did a U-turn, I turned around, I came back, and I reached in my pocket, I gave him that $10 bill, and I said, I hope this helps you out, brother. And, I went on down the road, and I was praying on the way home. I said, Lord, I said, I just gave my $10 to him for my gas money. Can you at least make sure I make it home, with what I got? And so I'm on my way home. I get a call from my mom, and she says, I'm over here at your aunt's house. You want to stop in and say hi on your way back through? And I said, sure. So I did. And so I sat down and I told them this story about what happened, that something that was laid on my heart, that I had turned around. I give this person my $10 gas money so I get home. And my aunt, she reached in her purse and pulled out a $20 bill and handed it to me. And I wasn't going to take it. I told her, I said, look, I didn't tell you this story to make you feel sorry for me and get the, give me the money. I just told you this story because I wanted to testify, that, I made it here at least, and I think I'll make it home with the gas that I got. And my aunt and my mom and my other aunt was all sitting there and said, don't you dare refuse that blessing.
Right. What goes around comes around, right? What do they call it? Pay it forward, huh?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't, I passed the man twice, and the second go around, I got like couldn't have been more a quarter mile, and I actually heard the words, don't you do that, in my head, and I turned
right
around. And
well, people are doing video studies now, right, of circumstances about homeless people or people ignoring them or people helping them, and they had this setup where this one young man would see a homeless person sitting, by himself and whatever, asking for help, and he'd go in a pizza shop or a Subway shop or whatever, and he'd get some food, and he'd come back out, and he'd sit down next to that homeless person, and he'd say, how you doing, and so on, and he'd offer him a piece of pizza, and of course, the homeless person was very grateful, and so on, and then the guy gave him the whole box of pizza, so like a whole pizza. And the guy was like, oh, no, I don't want to take that, and so on. So then the guy insisted, don't you dare do that. And so then he'd give the box of pizza to the homeless guy, and he'd walk away, but the filming's still going on. Well, the homeless guy gets up, and he goes into the park. And he goes to all of his other homeless friends and shares the pizza with his other friends, right?
Wow.
I mean, this is...
that's
humanity.
And on that food issue, there's a thing that goes on every single day without fail that really disturbs me. It's a lot of the restaurants and even some grocery stores and stuff like that. When food gets to a certain time stamp or day or whatever, it goes straight in the garbage.
Yes.
And there are some places out there who have started making a cutoff point where they will package it up and do a Meals on Wheels kind of thing and help people out, but for the most part there is so much waste that goes on in this nation that it's just mind-blowing. There's somebody out there that really would have enjoyed that, and some people I've actually seen it, witnessed it myself. Some people are actually out there digging in the dumpster. That's how desperate they are.
Yes. Yes. So the homelessness is shameful all around. It's not just here in this country. It's throughout the whole world. And it seems to be increasing, especially, with children being a part of that homelessness, and the anger and I guess even disgust is rising. Like, you know, the empathy is going down the tubes, and the, you know, the frustrations of people because they don't want to be bothered, or they don't want their restaurant outside to be, you know, a homeless person there because that will turn away customers, and people are so absorbed in their own lives and or their own survivals, you know. So, and there are people that are helping. That's true. Like we said, you have these shelters where the homeless people don't want to go to the shelters because they're safer on the streets, they say.
Yeah.
You know, there was this documentary of these two young boys who were in a juvenile house, you know. They had gotten in trouble and they went to jail, and then they were put in a, you know, I guess you call it a halfway house or something, along with some other young men, and they decided they wanted to know what it would be like to be homeless. And they did the same thing that you did, but in your backyard. They went out on the streets of New York City to be homeless for, I guess, a week or 2 weeks, I don't know, and they filmed this, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, the story was just about the homeless people making friends with them, some of them, and helping them out. Here's the best place to stay overnight, and here you got to get your cardboard, and here's what you do, and stay away from this area, and here's how we get food. And I mean, the whole thing was like, you know, a community of homeless, destitute people helping each other. And these young men had this experience, so they're walking the streets, and it's winter. They chose to go out in winter, and it's bitter cold, of course. And you're there, you have they did have jackets and hats. They had to get their cardboard. They had to figure out where they were going to stay. And every once in a while, police would come along and move them on. That could be 2 o'clock in the morning. And they're all snuggled in there trying to keep warm with some cardboard and newspaper, you know. And they told, you got to move out of here now. Go on, get. They had to pack up everything, all their boxes, and move on and find another place in the middle of the night. Bitter cold, wind, all kinds of stuff. Yeah, it was quite an experience for these young men, you know.
Yeah.
So it's like I said, I wrote in the chat before, therefore, but the grace of God go I, you know.
Do you have Barry in your contacts?
I do.
Can you add him to the call? He wants to join in.
Okay, let me see.
I tried to do it, but for some reason it's not allowing me to.
I see if I can get him. I don't know now.
Yeah, I think at some point, Patty.
You know what? It's not allowing me to get on my... on my Skype connections. Why not?
I don't know.
Well, Patty's out there. Hi, sis. Maybe she'd get him.
Yeah, well, drag her in, and maybe she can drag Barry in.
I can't drag anybody in, because my Skype won't let me. It's only you.
Let me see.
Only you.
Let me see if I can get Patty in here. Huh? It's just, I don't know. This is, like I said, it's a subject that it's hard to talk about because I don't know how to remedy it. I don't know how to get people to the mindset of, you know, being able to, it seems like you said earlier, the world has become so cold and self-centered and calloused, or, you know, the world revolves around them kind of mentality, and it's out of a sight, out of mind thing. Most people are so distracted with their own deal, and I can't understand why people, even in relationships, treat each other poorly because, you know, one of them wants to be the control freak or whatever, and they think that their self to be so important. You see what I'm saying? Everybody's supposed to be equal. That's the way my view on thing is. Everybody's supposed to be equal. We're all supposed to be brothers and sisters, and they seem to think that their selves are so much more important. They just treat people poorly. It's terrible. Man, did I mess up the call here? I still can't add Barry in there. I don't know why.
All right, I'm trying, but it's not happening. I'm trying to.
I got an idea. Are you in the Knights of the Round Table room itself?
Hold on. Yes, I am.
Let me look.
I am.
I could hang this call up and.
Well, I'm in the chat. That's the night. That's what you sent me on the Skype to get in to hear you.
No, it's.
Mm. That's not it.
Talk about the actual Skype one. I need to add you to this room too.
Is Patty on?
Well, she was, but I think she's trying to chase kids around at the moment. All right.
Where would I go here? What are you trying to ask?
I just added you to that one. I'm gonna try to call. I'm just going to hang this call up, and I'm going to try to call the entire Knights of the Round Table and see who shows and who don't.
Okay.
All right.
There I am.
Yeah, okay,
here's
you're back.
Here's Barry. See, they're all here.
Yay. Ah. Wow, I just called a lot of people.
Okay, is Barry on?
Barry there?
Hello. Hello?
Well,
hi.
That's me. Barry in here.
Morning. Cool.
Now, all the other names are dropping off, and so we'll get down to where we need to be.
Boy, is that ever noisy.
Yeah. So, essentially, Barry, we've been talking about the homeless condition out here in the world, trying to find some sort of resolution for it, and, you know, it's basically what we do. I don't have no solution. I honestly don't. It's a mentality of the world that, to me personally, I just can't understand. I can't understand why people could walk past somebody who was in need and not do nothing. I couldn't understand why millions of dollars are wasted by governments worldwide that, could go to housing and helpfulness or whatever. In the world that we live in, there ain't no reason for people to be starving. I mean, come on, look at all the waste that goes on everywhere. Everywhere in this world, there's so much waste that goes on. You know, and it's like, if you want to make the world a better place and you got to try to get everybody to the table and try to talk them in some common sense into them and, you know, touch their heart, so to speak, and get everybody to on the bandwagon to trying to do the right thing, maybe some people are right. Maybe this world is so bad off there ain't no fixing it, but I just can't stop at least asking the world to do something. You see what I mean?
Well, until the human heart changes, things won't change.
Well, so I understand
our,
that.
Our heart is so cold. Not my heart. I'm talking about the general population, how we have been, right from the time we're born, taught that everything is about you and life is about getting ahead and making money and having a house and having a family and buying a new car. And you know what, guys? If a third or a quarter of the money that's spent on military every year was spent on the homeless people in the world, there wouldn't be homeless people in the world. There wouldn't be any hunger in the world. So until we change the basis of our society, we're not going to see the change. But to me, man, I can't walk by somebody that's hurting. I help homeless people all the time. I know that sometimes they're going to go take the dollar or $2 that I give them, and maybe they won't spend it on food. Maybe they will go buy themselves a bottle of wine. But if that's what it's going to take for them to comfort themselves at this point in their life, I don't care. But I give homeless people money all the time. I don't know what the solution is outside of the change in the human heart.
Until
we change that,
you.
It's not going to change.
I agree with you. And don't get me wrong, I'm saying there are so many people out there that are doing so many good things. You know, there are a lot of people. I mean, but if you actually take the fraction of people that are out there doing things as opposed to the rest of the numbers of people, what, there's like close to 9 billion people on this planet, and a lot of them are living in poverty and homeless condition, and there's actually places in the world where you can go to jail for either being vagrancy and not having a home, or you can go to jail for feeding the homeless. To me, that's a big shame, man. That's a shame on society when somebody can go to jail for giving somebody else food.
Well, then, you know, I've read a lot of reports here in the last little while here about homeless people disappearing in the United States of America. So where are these people going?
Well, that's another good question.
And where are the body parts coming that are on the market? Jeez. I mean, we know these people that are behind the curtain, as I call them, the guys behind the curtains, are very evil, benign people. And I've read reports where all kinds of homeless people here, and I've read lots of them, are all of a sudden disappearing. Well, where are these people going? And where are they? Nobody asks those questions because nobody cares. We're all in our little bubble in this world. Not me. I'm talking about the world in general. I sit back and I look at the whole situation and I go, this is all unnecessary, that the world has enough food to feed everybody.
Yeah.
More of 10 times over. If we took care of this planet and harvested it properly and did what we're supposed to do instead of worrying about building bombs, there would be no hunger. There would be nothing. None of this would all, it would all go away.
But part of this ridiculous...
But we're not in charge, unfortunately. We think we're in charge, but we're not.
Part of this ridiculousness, it goes into the other show we do here on Shazoo's Radio, on the Mad Science Show, where we're kind of finding solutions for energy. But I'm watching, as I've been doing this for many years, I'm watching the things going on in this world where, you know, the government says one thing, companies say one thing. They always say what you want to hear, you know. But when it comes down to, actual putting solutions on the table, we're sitting here, we're showing solutions. We're showing ideas. We're sitting here saying, hey, you said we got a problem. Here's how we can fix it. And we're not getting the traction, so to speak, towards making those actually come to pass, if you understand what I'm trying to say here. Mm-hmm. And the same thing with homelessness. You know, there's a lot of materials that get wasted that could be recycled that you could actually build houses with. My friend Muddy, he built him a house out of pallets, you know. And where it's not the most beautiful thing, I'm sure it's a lot better than sleeping in a cardboard box in some alley somewhere, you know, with only newspapers for your blankets. How can we do this to our people? How can we allow them to do this? You see what I'm saying?
So here's a situation that you know, I just Googled this, homeless people disappearing, right? So in Utah, Salt Lake City, where have hundreds of homeless people gone? Following a police operation, even officers seem puzzled by the whereabouts of hundreds of people who lived around a downtown emergency shelter. Residents are mystified as to where they've gone.
I read that article, Barbara.
So police say they don't know?
They don't know. They disappeared.
So there's advocates for their part are fearing a humanitarian crisis that is brewing, and that's weird. That's the first I've heard of this.
Well, I kind of looked into that about a month ago. I was in from one of my weekends in the bush, and I was Googling around, and I read a couple articles, and that was, I believe that's one of the ones I read, and I read another one from somewhere in Wyoming, and one from New York City, where people that are there all the time, that people see all the time, all of a sudden aren't there anymore. And these are homeless people, so they don't have the means to travel around the country. They don't have the means to move. They don't have the means really to go anywhere. So they're, a homeless person will stay in a situation that's familiar to them, where they can get some food, they have a place to sleep, they know where they're going to sleep that night. So these aren't the kind of people that are going to move around at all. They're kind of like stuck where they are. They're in their little bubble, and that's it. And all of a sudden, they're disappearing. Well, where are they going? And just how benign and how evil are these people in charge of our world? Well, they're capable of just about anything. You know that. I know that. So to say that these people aren't, maybe, here's a scenario, being taken to a manufacturing facility and their body parts harvested, and their bodies disposed of because they're homeless, because they're not the kind of people that other people really go looking for. They don't have family that are looking for them. They're basically out in the world on their own. Perfect situation for these people that make $30,000 off a liver or $50,000 off a heart. Just a thought, guys. But that's something I believe is a real possibility in our society. Sad to say, but I believe it's a possibility. Go ahead.
Well, you know, the situation here is really concerning. You know, of course, nobody knows where the hundreds of homeless people, and this is just one city probably, right? Because this is seeming to be happening more so now in other places, are you saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah,
so,
it is.
I mean, what is
Google
so
it.
What?
There's lots of articles on it, Barb. Go ahead.
Okay, I'll look at them, but I'm just saying, so what are you thinking? Is there something that...
I think there's something evil going on here. Because people just don't disappear.
No, but people do disappear.
Yeah,
people disappear all the time. But you have a particular... Right, but you have a...
That they're talking about.
Well, you have a particular population now, a targeted population. Right?
Right.
So, I mean, just... What do you think is... What do you think?
I don't know what to think of that. But just to see people disappearing, and all of a sudden, lots of them. And with that one article you just mentioned there, there's hundreds of them that they can't find. Like, these people hang around the emergency shelters. That's where they live. They know where they have to go to get their lunch every day. They know where the food kitchen is. They've got this. This is their life. And all of a sudden, for them just to disappear. In these kind of numbers, one's really got to ask himself, where are they going? And what's happening to these people? We know that FEMA camps are a reality. Once you're in a FEMA camp, you have no way of communicating with the outside world. I just, to me, the whole thing stinks when I start reading about this kind of stuff.
So you're suggesting...
I'm not saying anything. I'm just putting out a thought. I'm not going to get nailed down to any comment like that, but... I'm putting out a thought.
Yeah, well, I'm very well aware of during the hurricane in the homeless shelters, people were being, supposedly, there were FEMA boats and so on, and they were putting the people, which were all really poor people, middle class poor people, those were the ones that were most affected. By the recent, deluge and so on, which may have been manipulated if we want to really get into conspiracy, as some are saying and some are pointing out through research. So you have these targeted populations, and then some people are saying that they were taking these people out of the shelters on to FEMA boats, and nobody knew, that's it. Nobody knows where they went. Nobody knows what happened to them. That's one incident, and then I saw this video, a newscaster was in the shelter, one of the shelters, and she was saying how the people are here trying to help the people who are, lost their homes and can't go back to their homes, but when they leave here, this is how it was said, when they leave here, we're trying to help them to understand that they will be in a world unlike the one they've ever lived in before.
Wow.
Oh, wait. Actually, she said they will be in a new world. That's what she said. A new world, unlike that they have never seen before. And I thought, holy mackerel, there's the words, new world. And they're talking about these homeless people when they come, when they leave the shelter. When we get them out of the shelter. So, I mean, I just...
We're sending you somewhere.
Will be a new world unlike any you've ever experienced.
I'm telling you one thing, this is like, this world gets stranger and stranger by the day. I mean, there's a lot of things out there. I watch a lot of different videos about conspiracy theories and stuff like that, and things that talk about, all these false flag events that are being perpetrated around the world, when you're sitting back and you're looking at the big picture, I know you got to take a lot of things that you see on the internet with a grain of salt, and you got to be discerning in the information that you're watching, but it sure does make you wonder. You know what I'm saying?
Okay, so here we go. Homeless people being abducted and sent to FEMA camps, claims an insider. Did you know that it is now illegal to feed a homeless person in at least 33 states in America? And what FEMA are planning on doing on behalf of the federal government is truly disturbing. And I popped that article in, you know, in chat. It says homeless people in American cities are being rounded up and disappeared by FEMA operatives, according to a suicide note left behind by a government insider. Ah. Well, there you go.
Well, you know, there's a lot of BS out there, Barb, but a lot of this, I think there's a lot to this that people aren't aware of.
Well, I'm saying, whatever's going on out there, we can't close our mind to any possibility. I mean, if the government or factions or, you know, secret organizations out there snatching up homeless people, that makes the situation even worse than it was before.
Well, people, just the same organization that could possibly do this, or doing this, are the same people that killed 3,000 American citizens on September 11th.
Right.
I mean, these people have no boundaries, man.
Well, there's evil.
There's evil. And there is nothing that they won't do to perpetrate their agenda. So when we're talking, about people that have no morals, have no soul. They are soulless individuals. They are, their bodies completely and totally taken over by an evil entity. And they are doing what that evil entity is telling them to do. And nothing in this world is outside the realm of possibility with these people. We are only starting to see the surface of some of the things I believe these people are going to pull off here in the very near future to put society into a complete state of chaos. And we see that coming day by day.
And that's a deliberate, so, to fight each other.
Of course it is, Barbara. It's all going in this direction. And we see that. If we sit back right now and look at everything in context, what we're seeing going on in the world, what we're seeing going on everywhere in the world, if we talk about political, financial, if we talk about geological, if we talk about anything that we talk about right
weather
now.
Weather modifications.
Yeah, we see an incredible chaos coming in our society. We do.
Yeah.
And it is building day by day. So where it's going, that's what we should talk about.
That's up to us.
It's up to us. I agree, Barbara. But a lot of people are totally unaware of the agenda that they still think, believe it or not, that the government is working in their best interest.
Now listen to this here. This is the note which was leaked by a member of the New York City Police Department who also explains why he decided to kill himself. And he said, "The America I grew up in and cherished has been murdered by its own federal government. Our Constitution has become meaningless and our laws politicized so badly they are no longer enforced except for political purposes." And the note said, continued, "Our elected officials are, to a person, utterly corrupt, completely devoid of any love or respect for the country which pays them. To them, everything is about getting and keeping power and making illicit money from backroom deals and so on." Well, so he was a 42-year-old Immigration and Customs Enforcement deportation officer. He shot himself inside Pier 40 in Hudson River Park at about 11 a.m. A source at the scene said the officer calmly walked into the park, took out a pistol, and shot himself in the head.
What a mess.
That's downright sad.
What a mess.
Well, you know, that really, what puts a person to that point in their life where they're willing to put a bullet in their own brain?
Really devastating information. Hopelessness.
I don't know, but pushed them over the edge.
We're up against so much more than just governments and factions. We're up against one another, it seems. I mean, I'm sitting here, I'm reading a comment in the chat room over there off of Shaziz Radio, and it's more of a mad science question, but nonetheless, I want to address it because the way that it was actually written up. It said, "Hey, Shaziz, if you don't mind explaining, do you think you give us the rundown on what exactly is it you're doing in your video solved and how you're seemingly able to turn an empty 9-volt into a 17.7 volt DC? I showed my friend who is all AP science classes and he said it's either you're faking it and it's a trick, or you're an idiot who doesn't know what you're doing and has no understanding of the law of thermodynamics. So please, how can I explain it to him to show you where right he was wrong or whatever. Anyway, he also said, maybe I'm just an idiot who watched the video and didn't understand it, but it looked like you were getting free energy. Look, first off, this is one of the things that I come up against all the time whenever I'm trying to put solutions on the table. My suggestion to A93080 out there in the chat room is send your friend to me and have him actually talk to me and I'll explain to him. Because as I explained yesterday on the Knights of the Round Table, the laws of thermodynamics are nothing more than a stumbling block to sit there. If you actually read what it says in the laws of thermodynamics, it's talking about a closed-loop system, which completely takes away anything, any outside source, and basically the laws of thermodynamics is there only to prove that perpetual motion isn't possible according to those set rules. Well, what I did in that video, it's not rocket science. I used what science already said, that voltage is pressure and pressure is what gets work done. And so I was able to charge a battery that started off from a 7.3 volt battery to I charged it up to 8.5. I could have went completely to 9 volts, but the video was 16 minutes long. And so I shut it off a little bit earlier. But nonetheless, when you have people like that or who are calling people me, like either I'm faking it or I'm an idiot and discouraging, solutions out there, we're hindering each other, if you understand what I'm trying to say here. I'm not trying to be rude to nobody, but, you know, somebody has to be an idiot not to pay attention to the simple. And what I showed in there, I mean, I can do it again. I can replicate it. But if we're going to make this world a better place, people are going to have to get out there and they're going to have to start doing some work of their own. Take the ideas that are put on the table, take those solutions, and do some work with it. The best way that I can answer your deal is, like I said, send your friend over to actually having to add me as a Skype contact, and we'll sit down and have a conversation about the law of thermodynamics and why it is that it doesn't apply to what I said. I'm about to do another video, and it's going to make solved look like child's play compared to what I showed in that video. But if you paid attention to that video, it violated none of the known laws of physics. It basically showed a different way in which you can utilize energy. And, you know, right now we're talking about homelessness on the Knights of the Round Table. And I'm finding myself in a position to try to defend myself and my credibility, you know, to somebody out there. And I have to ask the question, why? You know, if people's out there in this world starving to death and we can't find a way to feed them, if people's out there and they're sleeping in the cold, which I experienced last night, it's not pleasant. And if people are out there, if we have the option to give them free, alternative, clean, renewable energy, and I'm sitting there putting solutions on the table, but for my efforts, I'm an idiot. I mean, come on, people. If I'm an idiot for trying to do something positive in this world, then the purpose of me doing what it is I'm doing is it's getting hindered. We can shelter the homeless. We can feed the hungry. We can give people clean, renewable, affordable, at the very least, efficient energy systems that would benefit the world. That's what the Shaziz Mad Science and the Knights of the Round Table is all about. This is the reason why we have this radio show. If you note on here, we don't have no donation buttons. We're not asking you for anything. We're not asking you for money. We're not asking you for anything other than your input and your voice. Go out there, share your research with each other, find solutions, inspire other people to do the same thing and make this world a better place. That's the purpose for this radio platform that we've got going on here. This is why we do what it is we do. We're not trying to get famous. We're not trying to get rich. We're not trying to scam you or anything like that. We're just trying to do what somebody out there said needed to be done. Our government pointed out the fact that we supposedly had global warming, climate change, and such like that. And so, you know, we got to address this. So, even though I disagree with those concepts because they're based on bogus science, I'm still out here addressing it. I'm using my gift that I've been given as a talent to understand things mechanically, and I'm sharing that knowledge with the world for free. All right? And when it comes down to homelessness, I don't have the solution to how to fix this. I don't. The only solution, like Barry mentioned earlier, you got to change the heart and the mindset of the individuals out there to want to go do things. That's where our words come into play. We're trying to inspire hearts and minds and get people to share podcasts and find a solution to homelessness. Find a way to feed the people. Look, I posted a link, and I'm gonna see if I can find it again. It's over. If you go up at the top of the deal and you look at, there's a Knights of the Round podcast drop down page, and I'm gonna post a picture, and I'm gonna put it in here. I've done this before, but I want to show you a miracle. All right, and this wasn't done by me, but it was done by somebody out there with a heart of gold that took this child from a really sad state of affairs and brought him back to life. All right, gave him hope. I'm going to post his picture. And I want you to take a look at it. And then I want you to ask me your question again. Why it is that we're doing what we're doing? I mean, like, do you really think that everybody in this world is all fakery or trying to scam or do something terrible? You know? I don't get it.
Well, this is the problem. And thank you, Shaziz. And I want to thank you for all that you do and your good heart. All right? And this is the problem. Right here, somebody named Anon, who can't even say their name, comes on here when we're talking about something so significant and important and heartbreaking and starts to throw out some nasty comments to you just because maybe they don't get the directions, or maybe they didn't do something quite right. But is that how we communicate with people? That's the problem. That's exactly what we're talking about. This is the whole problem. That kind of attitude.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's terrible.
So there's no room here for that. Come into a good way here. If you don't understand something, I don't understand half of what Shaziz is describing, but I'm not calling him an idiot, and I'm not going to do that.
And
I'm curious to know what he's sharing, and I know that he's really in a good way in his heart, trying to help people, like we all are.
Warren.
And name calling and anonymity, there's no room for that. If you have a question, ask someone in a good way.
Warren.
Hello?
Hello.
Yeah,
can you
Raymond?
Hear me?
Who is this?
It's Raymond.
This is...
Oh, Raymond. Hi. I didn't hear you because I'm on a rant here.
Well, yes, you are, sweetheart.
And I have a right to be.
Yes, you do.
But there's no room for this. We are in trouble here in so many areas, and we have somebody popping in, disrupting our conversation in a not unkind way. I'm sorry that person doesn't understand some things, but let's be kind.
Don't
laugh at me, because
I'm not laughing
now.
At you, sweetheart. I'm not laughing at you. I'm laughing with you. Honest to God, so help me, I am not laughing at you. But this, what was the word you said? Anonymity?
Yeah.
Okay.
Step up.
I don't
Show
want
your
it.
Face.
I have a picture on YouTube. I have a picture of me on this channel, and you can see it.
I'm not talking
about name you. Is Raymond Lawrence Head. I live in Louisville, Texas. I do not want to be secret. When I speak, I want the world to know who is talking. Anon.
is old, really old English, meaning, wait a minute, I'm coming, anon, anon.
Can we get back to what we're talking about here?
Okay, go ahead, I'll shut up.
This is, look, I got a Skype, you can call me on Skype anytime, and I tell people in my radio show, I tell people on my YouTube channel, anytime you have any questions, add me as a contact on Skype and we'll discuss it. Because, like I said, we got an issue out here that we're talking about today about, you know, homeless people in the world, and we got to find solutions. There are literally people out there trying to find solutions. I listed off a bunch of different YouTube videos out there that, some of them are good deals and some of the people are taking advantage of homeless people and other people are making a mockery of them. And, you know, homeless painter reunites a long lost son. That's a wonderful story. It needs to be heard. We need more stories like that. We ain't got time for the shenanigans. If you take a look at that picture that I posted in there, and you look at what this lady did. This is a lady down here feeding a baby. They call these little children, they call them witch children or something like that over there. And they people, you look at the people in the background, they just walk by and they look at this child as if he's not even human. And in this particular state of affairs, he don't even look human. But this lady had enough compassion and enough drive in her heart to take this child into her care. And then you look right at the same exact picture. This little boy, he's a beautiful child. A year later, he's sitting in there, nice clothes, a little jumpsuit with his backpack, and she's giving him water. And he has hope. And if you knew the whole story of all the medical that he had to have in order to get the parasites out of him and get his body back healthy, this lady, she literally went the distance. She didn't stop until that child was cured. He had a chance at life again. And this is why we do what we do. I don't want to curse, but sometimes I get so incredibly mad that I just want to... How can you let people... These are humans. How can you let people live like this? If your friend thinks I'm faking something, then send your friend over there to man up and I'll sit there and explain the law of thermodynamics. And I tell him why it is that I do what I do. This is why I do what I do, because of what this lady's out there doing. This is why we do this radio show. Because of what this lady's doing. We need more people like that. I don't know what more to say.
Well, let's not spend too much time on the crap.
Yeah, I'm with you.
All right, because we are all really concerned, those of us here sharing and talking, we're all really concerned, obviously. So I don't want to spend too much time when somebody throws a curve at us, because that's not going to be helpful.
Yep.
Just saying.
Curve is an anonymity.
How do we fix it? How do we touch the hearts of man out there to get this world? How do we get our elected officials out there to do some real work?
First,
are you really thinking that that's going to make a difference? I think it's like this woman, and like other people we see lending a hand, reaching out. It's the people who need to do this. That's how I feel. I don't think the elected officials.
Well, I believe
are. Are up to it or going to do it. I think they have their own agenda.
First.
I think it's up to the people, up to us to keep talking about this and sharing these kinds of stories and, you know, keeping our hearts open.
First. Number one, stop listening to anonymity people.
Yeah, we're
people
past that.
Who don't want to know who they are, accusing you of doing stupid crap. Stop listening to them. They are dumb, not stupid. They are ignorant. They don't know what they're talking about. Shazam, you did it. Okay? I was with you when you did things I didn't know. I don't know about your battery thing, but I do know you, and I do know your heart, and I do know you don't pull trickery. I know you. I am Raymond Lawrence Head, a living being. I live in Louisville, Texas, okay? I traveled 800 miles to be with you and see you do these things. I know they are real. I am not an anonymity. I am not somebody trying to hide in the bushes.
Well, I understand that.
Alright. Now, wait a minute. I said yesterday on Mad Science, you don't eat shellfish in months with R's in them, right? Uh-huh. Why? Because that statement was true before refrigeration. Things change. There are people that don't want to change. So they don't eat shellfish in months with R's in them. Why? Because they don't understand where that saying came from. Now, there's no such thing as free energy. Why was that saying said? Wait a minute. A heavier than air machine cannot fly. And that saying was true. Was.
But how's this going to bring us to resolutions for homelessness?
Okay. The resolution to homelessness is the United States alone throws away enough food every day to feed every man, woman, and child in the whole entire country of Kuwait 3 square meals a day for a year. The problem is you cannot get it to them before it spoils. Okay, so transportation.
Well, even in that section right there, there's got to be some sort of way that people, you know, with the technology we've got today to calculate up the best times to cook things. I'm sure there's probably people out there working on it or whatever. But nonetheless, we live in a world of abundance. We've been blessed. Yes. We've been blessed with this planet. To me, is so incredibly amazing.
You just said the whole secret right there. We, you, me, Barbara, Barry, we live in a land of abundance. So much so that we're throwing this stuff away. We're putting it in the landfills.
Well,
we're throwing it away. Why? Because we cannot get it to the people that need it. And now, all of a sudden, we have the internet, and there's people living in these countries that have computers. They're listening to us. We want to get them to them, okay? We will give them our trash, our rotting food that we cannot eat because we grew too much.
I don't want to give them trash.
No, wait a minute. I don't mean trash. I'm sorry. Sometimes I use the wrong words, and Liam and Non is going to take my words and twist them around. Okay? Look, all I'm saying is we have more than we need, and we're more than willing to give it freely. But we don't have the means to take it to them. And you've said many, many times.
We got the means. We got the means to go clear across to other nations and drop a bomb on them, so we should be able to get them done.
Okay. So now, what are you talking about?
I'm talking about here in a world of technology that we have access to machinery and boats and equipment and everything under the sun, there's no reason why that we as a worldwide family can't take care of those that fallen through the cracks of society.
So now you're saying it is yours, Barbara's, Patty's,
that's
Barry's,
what I've been saying responsibility
to feed the world.
Why not?
There are 58 organizations fighting food loss and waste. And there you can Google it up. People are doing this. They know how to do it. They've got the system set up. This is not a problem if people will step up and do it. And people are stepping up and doing it.
Right.
So, you know, we are all a part of this, absolutely. My question would be to you, when was the last time you reached out to a homeless person? My question to everyone listening is, when was the last time you reached out to a homeless person, just said, you know, hello, or how are you doing today, or just offering them something?
Yep.
Just
every
asking
time
the
I
question.
Every time I meet one.
Yep.
Yeah, me too.
You know,
I was raised that way.
No, I'm sorry. I have done exactly what you're talking about, Barbara.
Don't
apologize. Many, many times, but not, Patty, I'm sorry, not every time. The time that I saw a gentleman standing on the side of the road with $250 blue jeans on, a polo shirt that cost $150, Nike tennis shoes that cost $175, with a sign saying, I need help.
Yeah, but see,
that's a unique situation.
Raymond,
all right, wait a minute.
I think
minute.
I can judge and just determine.
It's not up to you to determine what that person does. It's up to you to determine what you do.
Yeah.
And
it doesn't matter to me if
I see an old woman with gray hair, a summer dress, in December, in Dallas, Texas, with a half bottle of not so clean water and a dirty paper towel that comes up to me and says, hey, I'm sorry, I haven't eaten in 3 days. Can I clean your windshield on your truck for $1? I just need something to eat. And I said, okay, go ahead. So she halfway, I would like to say half-assed, but she says, but
look, I'm sorry, I hung up on him.
Ah, somebody else is trying to come on, right? Anyway,
I just want to say that it's not us to determine another person's life or their choices. It's only up to us to determine our lives and our choices. And if I see someone who says they are in need and I have the ability to do something for them, and I don't, that's on me.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what they do. If they take what I give them and they turn around and they go buy a bottle of whiskey with it, that's on them. That's on them. But if I sit here and say, well, I've got a certain criteria that you have to meet, so let me get my check pad out here. Let me see what you're wearing. Let me check, see if you got dirt behind your ears. Let's see. And I go down this criteria and say, well, now you flunked three of them, you know, because your ears aren't, you don't have dirt behind your ears, and that shirt looks like it's pretty good shape and everything, and you got socks on. No, I'm sorry, you can't eat. You know, that's ridiculous to me. That is selling myself out. Deciding on my own that I determine your works and your needs.
Yeah.
I'm your God. Okay.
You know, because even somebody who might have been considered, middle class or even semi wealthy, even those folks have problems in life and they can fall on hard times as well. It's not for me to judge, like you said, what their condition or their worth is. If they're a human and they are asking for help, I'm gonna try. You see what I mean?
That's well, I was raised that way.
Yeah.
I was raised that way.
Me too.
And all the people that my father and my mom helped throughout my young life, there were some people who wound up taking more, abusing the help. Yeah, sure, but there were so many that were so grateful and that finally got a frickin' chance up because of that, you know?
Yep.
I just popped in a link, 5 amazing strategies to eliminate food waste and feed the hungry. Put it in the chat and in the Skype chat. There are ways, you know, I know we're saying we don't know the answers, we don't know the solutions, but I think we do, and other people are also working on this as well. You know, people are stepping up to the plate. And if somebody comes up to, you know, that, like you said, Patty, it's not for me to judge, and Jesus and I talked about this earlier. You know, it's my nature, like you said, you were brought up that way. I was brought up that way. My mother helped people in the neighborhood who couldn't get to the store or, you know, couldn't help themselves or
right.
in their own homes. That's how I was brought up. So And we were poor too. I'm not going to judge another person and say, well, I don't like what they're wearing, so I'm not going to give them any money. I can't make that judgment. You know, like we said before, if a person, we're told don't give money to the beggars in the streets, the homeless, because they'll just go buy a bottle of wine. I don't care what they do. That's up to them. If that gives them comfort, my part is to help. My part is to reach out to another human being. And, you know, I was talking to, I was in the grocery store a couple months ago, and there was this guy, maybe about in his 60s, standing there with a big backpack and on his back and so on. He's buying a few things, and I said, you look like you're ready for camping. He said, oh yeah, you know, and I went outside. He talked to me more. He said, I'm living in the woods up here. Now, this was a period of time where it was getting chilly, you know, now that I'm thinking of it, chilly nights like Shaziz was talking about when frost comes on the ground and you're laying out on the ground. And he says, I'm living up in the woods here. He said, but you know what you do when you get lemons? You make lemonade. And he said, and I know, he says, I'm praying because soon I'm going to have a home. I know it's going to come. But no, he had a good attitude, you know.
Let me tell you a story that one time happened to me in real life. And I guess at this particular time in life, I had a job, I had a family, I had my own home, and I went on a journey to find my biological father because I had somebody tell me where he might be living. So I went all the way out to a place called Porterville, California with a friend of mine. And we came across this real tiny house. And this is the address where my biological father was supposedly at some point in time. But this house, you could tell that, you know, it was pretty in bad disrepair. And the family that lived there, it was a lady and her child that lived there. And they were poor. I mean, if you went inside this house, you'd be amazed at how incredibly small this house was. It had 2 rooms in the entire house and 1 bathroom. That was it. It was a kitchen, a bedroom, and a bathroom. It was like a little kitchenette kind of deal. But this family took me and my friend in, and they made fried potatoes was all that they had. But they shared their food with me. A total stranger brought me in and fed me, and we had a conversation, and they give from their heart something that they probably really didn't have to give, but they gave it nonetheless to a total stranger. And that was something that has followed me ever since then. I wished I could have went back. I wished I could have done something for that family to help them out. But I never went back. But that experience that somebody who didn't have it to give, gave anyway. That to me is the example that the rest of the world should follow.
Well, where do you place your worth for humanity? That's what it comes down to. There was a while back years ago, we were doing a show and someone was talking about the homeless situation in the city where they lived. and say, you know, there are more and more homeless all the time, and the food banks can't keep them fed, and these people are just so hungry, I don't know what we can do. And I said, you know, well, just imagine if everyone in that city decided to take a homeless person to dinner at their house, then nobody would be hungry. You know, it could be that simple. It's not as if we all bear the burden together, if we all decide that homelessness is not a disease, it is a condition of this society, and that we are this society. We make up this society. So if there are homeless people out there, independent of why they are, there are many, many reasons. Some people want to be. Some people are forced into it. It doesn't matter. The simple thing that matters is your humanity and where you align yourself. You know, there are so many things that you can do. How many people can tell me that you don't have an extra blanket in your house? How many people can tell me that you don't have an extra pair of shoes in your house? There is something that you can do for people. You don't have to have a committee to tell you, well, this is what we want you to do. This is how we want you to do it. This is where we want you to do it. You don't have to have that. You only have to have that desire in yourself to reach out, to realize that, how does it go, Shaziz? But for the grace of God go I.
Yeah.
You know, it's not hard to put a helping hand out. What is hard is making the choice to reach out without judgment. Yeah. You know, to
everybody just skipped a cup of coffee every day, the homelessness would disappear.
Yeah.
That simple. And with that being said, I do have to run on you guys. We have 4 days exactly left now of mushroom picking. Our temperatures are good till Wednesday. We go from +7 to -5 on Thursday, -7 on Friday. So I'm going out right now. My buddy's on his way over, but I will be back regular after this week's over because the mushrooms will be dead. But I do got to go walk, guys. I've had an
incredible time. Dang it, Barry.
I know, but you know what, Patty? After Thursday, we're getting into a freeze-up here. I've got my wood in, but all of a sudden, it's going from +7 on Wednesday here to -5 on Thursday. So that will be the end of the mushrooms for 2017, and I'll be back here all the time, hopefully, if you allow me to come in and talk.
Okey-dokey.
But I hung around just to hear your voice, Patty, and of course, I haven't heard Suzette talk for a while, and I've been out in the bush, and doing my mushroom thing, but unfortunately I'm back in reality now again, and look forward to talking to you guys lots in the near future.
Well,
have a great day, guys. Love y'all.
You too. Have fun in the
picking. Have some good picking there.
Well, earlier we had even touched on a disturbing side of things that, you know, people coming up missing and stuff like that. You know, there's only thing I can say is people, you gotta watch out for each other. You gotta be your brother's keeper. You gotta keep an eye out. If you see your neighbor in trouble, or you see somebody in trouble, or something ain't right, you gotta come together and take care of people. It's just as simple as that. You know, if they're
my last thoughts are for the native lady that died in the bush this year, up here.
Yeah,
Frances Robinson. She went missing for 7 days, and they gave up the search on her.
Oh man.
So, sad. Always happens. Okay, guys, have a great day, and I'll talk to you again soon. Love y'all.
Yeah, bye-bye. You too. Take care.
Love you, Barry.
It's just that, you know, I feel like everybody out there in this world is so incredibly important. And we, you know, every single soul out here is a piece of the puzzle. And we can't afford to be losing people, you know? We can't afford to be losing people to starvation and sickness and all that kind of stuff. You know, there's some really sick-minded individuals that believe this world is overpopulated. Well, as far as I'm concerned, they hadn't paid attention. There's so much room out there. There's so much. We got untouched land. The people, that the governments of the world have tied this land up, and nobody can go there. They're reserves or something like that. What are they reserving it for? You know?
Well, also, she says, I mean, if people think this world is overcrowded, they've never been to Kansas or Nebraska. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
You know? I'm just saying.
It'd take you a whole day to go across Kansas. I know. I've done it.
Yeah. There's not a lot of people here. You know? And Nebraska is the same way.
Yeah.
And there's other states like that. And in every state, there are areas. I mean, it's the propagation of the lie for the agenda. You know? That, oh, see, look at these cities. See how overcrowded they are. Well, yeah, you're in the freaking cities.
Yeah.
You're crowding people on top of each other. Yeah.
They call them stack and pack housing. They got people stacked on top of each other, and then they wonder why. Yeah, if you go down to the city and you look over you stand on a hill and look down at the city, you'll see there's a smog cloud over there. I wouldn't want to live over there. You come out here where we're at, there's fresh air. You can breathe. There's room to run around.
Yeah, know? Missouri's the same way. I have to say, and Oklahoma.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, there's, and it's not overcrowding. It's the presumption that people, don't realize outside of these cities and stuff that there's land, that there's vacancies, that nature is abundant, you know?
Yeah. And the hypocrisy of those out there preaching depopulation is they're not volunteering themselves to make room for anybody else. They're not volunteering their families. They're volunteering you.
Excellent point.
You know, and that ought to be a red flag to anybody with common sense if they're not the ones. You know, it's like this. Stephen Gibbons posted a picture in the chat room that I posted on to the Doggone Mad Science podcast page. It might have been on the Knights of the Round Table. I'll have to take a look at both pages and see where it is. But it's a brilliant thing. It shows the difference between a boss and a leader, you know. And the boss is sitting up there and he's pointing and telling everybody what to do. Where the leader, he's out front and he's leading the pack. So if you're one of the depopulation people, then what you should be doing is leading the pack. Lead
Heck
by
yeah.
example.
Step up, be an example.
Yeah. It's that's as simple as that. You know.
And if you want to go and you want to get the useless leaders like they talk about all the time, then you go in to get the ones that don't build, that don't create, that don't innovate, the ones who don't have solutions. And who is that? That would be your leaders. Yeah, yeah, the ones that sit up there and tell you what you can have and what you can't have, because they have to take everything that you have.
Yeah.
And you have to create it for them, and you have to build it for them, and you have to make sure that they stay in their secure little realm of haves so that you can maintain your little realm of have-nots. So those are the people who are the useless eaters. They're not doing anything for me. Yet they're taking everything that I produce.
Yeah.
You know?
It's the leaders.
So step up.
It's the leaders of this world that we trust so much that we allow them to send our children into war against other people's children. You know? And then, you know, I see these things on TV all the time about, you know, donating to this group and donating to that group, and I've been seeing them since I was a child, and so I'm 52 years old, so there's at least 35, 40 years of my life that I've been witnessing the same exact problem over and over and over again. How long does it take? Seriously, folks, how long does it take to resolve an issue that has been in everybody's face all these years?
Well, then you hear about discoveries that when you're donating that money to this organization or that organization, that it's actually not getting to where it needs to be given.
Yeah,
well,
like
you give a dollar, you give a dollar and 2 cents of it goes to the actual person who needs it, you know. And the rest of it goes to those who say, oh, we want to help, give us room now.
You know,
and they go home to their steak dinner while the homeless is still sitting in his cardboard box in the alley with
right.
his little cup of soup.
I know that a lot of people get frustrated when I bring up my faith, but I got to do it anyway because, you know, in my book, A Faith, it says that God says what you do unto the least of me, you do unto me. All right? And so if I was a person that had a church and I wanted to, you know, do what I'm supposed to be doing, you know, testifying to my belief system or whatever, and, you know, there's this thing that's called tithing. You know, one thing before I go into the tithing portion of it is that there are churches out there all over this world that are under what's known as a 501(c)(3) tax exempt status, which is for their efforts. They don't have to pay taxes on any donations that they get, but they're also under regulations where they can't say certain things or whatever. You're pretty much... on one hand, it's separation of church and state, but then on the other hand, the government's got their hand in the pocket of the church, and the church has got their hand in the pocket of their hand in hand. So when I get down to that, and I think about all the things that I was taught in my belief, is that, you know, there was a story about Jesus went to the temple, and he shoved over the tables of the money takers, and he said, this isn't a place, this is a house of God, this isn't a place for finance. Well, somebody out of the doggone crowd said, well, Jesus, should we pay our taxes? And Jesus said to him, whose face is on that coin? And the guy said, why Caesar's? And he said, well, render unto Caesar what is Caesar's, and render unto the Lord what is the Lord's. And, you know, if I had a church and I was the pastor of that church, and the whole tithing issue that people got to go to church and they got to give this church money, and the church is supposed to take this money and they're supposed to do good things to the community, which is not always the case. Sometimes it's Cadillacs and gold rings and necklaces and, you know, fancy stages with a floor show on it. That those churches, as many churches as I've seen in my country, those churches could have solved starvation and homelessness with all the finances they got. But if I personally was to have a church, I would tell the people of that congregation, I'd say, look, first off, don't bring your money here. If you want to tithe to this church, you go out there and you find the people in need and you give it to them. That's what.
And if you don't have money, then you tithe your time. Tithe goods. You tithe whatever you have.
Tithing isn't just about money. It's about service to your community, to your brothers and sisters. You go out there, if you ain't got no money, and you got some extra shirt or blanket like Patty was talking about earlier, you give them a blanket. You find a need, you address that need, you're tithing to the church, and you're honoring your Creator by doing so, because He put us down here to help each other out. That's the way I look at it. I'm sorry to bring up my faith, because I know there's a lot of people out there that don't have that. But it works for me, and I got to use it to SharePoint and testify to what I believe in. So, you know, if I run people off by that...
If you are offended by someone's faith, then you've already stepped over the boundary of self-responsibility and humanity. Because, again, you're judging. You don't have to agree. You don't have to believe. You don't have to have faith. But being able to something like... oh, that guy is a Christian. I'm not going to listen to a word he says. I mean, what have you done? What have you done? It's just ridiculous to me for anybody to be offended by someone's faith. You get offended when somebody comes up and knocks the crap out of you.
Yeah.
You get offended when somebody comes up and runs you over with a car. You don't get offended because somebody has faith.
Well, unfortunately, today, a lot of people are getting offended around faith or spirituality or religion, and I think that's part of the agenda, but, you know, because it makes them uncomfortable. It's politically incorrect these days, or incorrect, whatever you want to say.
Well, Paul Harvey must have been a prophet back in 1965, because if you listen to words that come up out of his mouth, that's what you see in society. That's why we still got homelessness. That's why we still got hunger and sickness. The companies out there, as much as they might do good things to some extent, they're not doing what they should have been doing all along. There are people out there that know about alternative medicines, and they're being pushed to the side, sometimes even being thrown in jail for saying that, you know, hey, this herb will help you out, you know, cure your sickness or whatever. You can't say that in society. And if you're getting arrested for feeding the hungry, there's something wrong with this picture. You see what I mean?
Well, whatever happened to do unto others as you would want to have done to you?
Yeah.
And what would happen? What about the words, love thy neighbor as thyself? We're all neighbors to each other. Don't have to be living next door to each other. You know, what happened to that? That's what I'm saying. It's politically, you know, unacceptable now. That's the trouble. A big trouble, I think, that's been happening is that, you know, that issue with, well, we would just say it like it is, you know. You want to say the Ten Commandments that we are meant to live by, or Creator's Law of One, what we talk about with the Indian people lived according to Creator's Law of One, which really pretty much identifies similarities as Yeshua's words, or the words that came down to, you know, on the tablet. I guess Moses got the tablet with the Ten Commandments, the word, you know. So what happened to all that, you know? I mean, that's like living in with compassion and goodness and caring and stewardship, you know? All that's been thrown out the window, deliberately.
Well, there is a darkness on the land, but there are angels among us, because I'm telling you, I'm sitting here, I'm still looking at this picture with the baby in there. I'm still looking at this picture. And this
lady, you're right.
She went the distance. And that's all,
right.
That's all we're asking anybody. Go to distance wherever you can go. Do
well,
what you can
be the
do.
Angel.
Yeah.
If you're looking for an angel to help you, become the angel, and you will receive tenfold what you know, how you help others.
Yep. That's how we resolve it. That's how we, the people, resolve these issues. We don't walk by and ignore it like it ain't happening. We walk by and we help. We jump in there and we help. This lady, like I said, and I'll say it again, she went the distance. And to me, she's a miracle. She is one of the people out there doing good things. And I know there's tons of people out there. But when you're out there, I'm inspired by this picture. You know, I'm saddened because I look at the left and this baby. I can't picture anybody allowing a baby to get in that condition. And then on the right, I'm seeing her works a year later. And I'm inspired. It makes me want to go out and do something for somebody. And that's what we're hoping, that these words coming out of our mouths and from our hearts is going to inspire you, the listeners out there, to go out there and do something like that.
Yeah, and if people out there are listening are uncomfortable with what we're talking about and how we're discussing this real big issue, this real problem, this something that's very concerning, that's happening to our, you know, other human beings. If you feel uncomfortable, I don't know, I'd question that. Maybe, you know, like you want to hear about UFOs or aliens or something, you'd prefer to hear that.
Yeah. Well,
I don't know.
There's plenty of shows out there for that.
That's for sure.
All
I say is don't get on the ship, because it's probably a FEMA ship.
Yeah. It's like that.
Well, here's something to think about also, when we're thinking about, like the picture that I'm looking at right now, Shazza, that you're talking about, and this woman, you're helping this child. There are children, there are elders, there are people across the globe, in every country, in every city, in every place, that are doing without, and it's manufactured. There is no reason whatsoever, no logical reason, that these people should be doing without. I'm not talking about communist way of everybody has to have a little bit of something. No, I'm talking about a system that creates these situations, a system that creates this control. And we support this system. We support this system. We live in this country here, the greatest country, quote, because of our, quote, democracy, because we come as a melting pot, and all these cultures live here together. We all have the ability to supposedly innovate, create our own businesses, to seek out our own American dream. But that's never been a possibility. Not because we're not capable of it, because we are capable of that and greater things. And there should never be a person that doesn't have water to drink. There should never be a person that does not have food to eat or a place to live. That is an impossibility in a world where people work together in unison for the benefit of all. It's impossible. And the reason why we have it right now today is because we support a system that devises and manufactures these situations.
Yep, we are.
So, yeah, we don't have to support the system, do we?
No, we're literally feeding the beast that's eating us alive, and it's sickening. There is a darkness out there, folks. Whether you believe in good or evil or not, you can't deny it. Looking at this picture, if you close your right eye while you're looking at that picture and you see the scene that's going on there, there's an angel sitting there, and she's basically taking the step necessary to bring this child to. When you close your left eye, look on the right side of this picture, and you see where he ended up. That's how you combat the evil. You become that angel.
That's just one person.
Yeah.
One individual.
Imagine
how many of us here? 8 billion?
Yeah. Almost 9 billion people on this planet. You know, there are about 200 to 300 million people in the United States alone. That's just one country. That's not all the rest of countries. I know a lot of people out there got a good hearts, and a lot of people do a lot of good deeds. But until the job is done, we all got to work. You know, it's as simple as that.
The people have a better way. We have a better way. We have more solutions to cure every single thing that ails us and the mother.
Yep.
We have everything we need. We don't have to look outside of ourselves and our communities to be able to make this world exactly what we want it to be. But we cannot do it while tugging on the coat hem of the control that says, you must stay down there and we will remain up here.
Yeah.
We can't do it that way.
No, we can't. And like I said, I'm 52 years old. I keep saying that. And at least 40 some odd years, 35 to 40 years of my life, I have seen the same commercial. Somebody starving, somebody abusing a puppy, somebody doing something. Now we need to know, okay, well, we got this problem out here. We're out here addressing it the best we can with what we got to work with. And, you know, we do what we can in our own little circles of life. And, you know, we're trying to lead by example. We need more people out there to, you know, share these stories. Take this podcast, send it to a congressman or a senator. Maybe they care, maybe they don't care. But this podcast has a lot of words of wisdom that if somebody does hear it, maybe they will be inspired to do something like this lady did. You know, you can do something like this lady did. It takes a lot of effort. This lady, you know, she had to go around and she had to find people to help donate money for medical bills because this poor little child, he went through the ringer just to get where he's at. And it was no easy task for her, I'm sure, because if you look on the left and see that little baby in that state of affairs, boy, I tell you, that's disheartening as all get out. But to see the opposite side of the spectrum, what she accomplished, there is a beautiful little child standing there with hope.
Yeah, another thing too, you know, when you're going around about town, you're doing your things and everything, when you see somebody who is supporting someone else, who is putting out that helping hand, go join them.
Yeah.
Don't just walk. Help them help others. Stand together. Let the message go out. Once, you know, you have one person helping the homeless, feeding them, and you're riding by and you think, oh, look at that person. That's an awesome person. Where are you? Join that person. Be another awesome person. And another awesome person will join. And another awesome person will join. And pretty soon, we're dealing with this situation. We're actually making change. We're actually throwing that positive pebble in the pond.
I think what we've all been saying all along is that if you see something in this world broke, then fix it. It's that simple.
You know, even when you go out, when I go out, when I venture out, I go to the store, and I'm always looking at the people. I catch somebody's eye, and I see the people, you know, are really, a lot of people are just seeming down and distracted or gloomy, some of them outright gloomy or whatever, and I always try to catch an eye and give them a smile or just talk to people. You know, just a simple connectedness, like a human, you know, human to human, just to participate that way can make such a difference in someone's life.
Oh, it sends a ripple. You know, there's this thing called the butterfly effect. There's the pay it forward deal. There's, you know, something as simple as a smile, the positive pebbles. These aren't cliches. These are realities. You got more power in your body than you can possibly imagine. Something as simple as a smile could travel around this world. You smile at somebody, they smile at somebody, and people at some point don't even know why they're happy, but everybody's smiling. You know, the same thing works on the opposite side of the spectrum as well. If you pop negativity out to the world, that's all they hear. This is why people are down and out. This is why people are self-medicating. They need you to exercise that gift that the Creator gave to you, the power of the spoken word, the power of your actions, the power of your love. They need you to exercise that gift because they're in trouble, you know?
Yes. Exactly.
I don't know how better to say it. You know, like I said, sometimes I got some folks to tell me I'm on a soapbox. I'm standing up here preaching to the choir. But sometimes you have to remind people out there, it's the job's not over yet. If there's people in this world doing without, I slept on a lawn chair out there by a campfire of my own free will. All right, and it was uncomfortable. I had to get up in the middle of the night, put more fire on the wood, and you know, that kind of stuff. I'm 52 years old. I got arthritis, and I, you know, it was a stupid thing for me to do, but I needed to experience that experience so that I could know what somebody else's trials and tribulations would be if they were staying out there. Because last night, when I woke up in the morning, there was frost on the, I mean, a lot of frost. Somebody's out there sleeping in that. And we can't afford to be losing people left and right to the cold and to sickness and stuff like that. These people are important. They're part of the picture, the pieces of the puzzle that make up all of humanity. If we're willing to just walk by and allow our brothers to drop, what if that's you the next time around? Wouldn't you want somebody to reach out a hand and give you some food or comfort or a smile on a day that you're having a bad day or whatever? That's all we're saying here. We're not trying to make ourselves out to be better than anybody else. We're just trying to point out this is doable.
And yeah, I've been there. I know what people go through when there's no food, when there's no home, when, you know, I know. It's not like I'm speaking of things that I've never experienced myself. But during those times, I can tell you the angels were there. Someone was there. Someone did reach out to me. And like I said, I grew up, my dad, I don't know what his life was before me, you know. But I do know that my dad lived his whole life in service to people and expected nothing in return. My father built people up who were broken and who had lost everything, and he brought them back and he gave them back their own self-worth, their own ability to rise up out of it. He did not just give them a helping hand. He gave them their life back by simply offering them what little he had. This is how I grew up. And he didn't suffer for it. He did not do without. He did not lose out by reaching out to someone else. He gained. And like I said, there were people who did take advantage, but it didn't matter. It didn't matter because they were gone and someone else was there that he could help. This is where we need to be. We can't keep thinking about, well, what if I put myself out there and I get burned? You know, those people who are in need, they've been burned.
Yeah.
And if you have the ointment that will soothe their wounds, then use it. Use it.
Yeah.
Help them. And they will in turn help someone else. That's the way it goes. You know?
That's all we're asking. It's as simple as that. Don't help us, help them. You know? I'm blown away by all this. I really honestly am. I'm blown away because I just can't visualize why that this world is in the state of affairs that it's in, and you see people all day long, every day, that seem to be sick, and they seem to be self-absorbed, and some of them just seem to stick their nose up at other people, you know, walk past a homeless person and judge they might be an alcoholic or a druggie. Well, you know, a lot of veterans in a lot of different countries watch their brothers and sisters lay down their lives so that you could enjoy what you got. At what point do you owe your brothers and sisters around the world a little bit of payback? You know what I mean? A little bit of uplift and a little bit of love. It goes a long ways.
What does Barb say all the time? Love is the key.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's hard for people to wrap around their minds. It's so simple, but it's difficult, right, for
it's
people?
It's the best tool that we got.
That's right. It is a powerful frequency beyond your imagining. Love. Actually, you got to add unconditional love, because we get in trouble with just love because people have it, you know, expect something if, you know, or from people, or if I love you, you know, my agenda is that you will do this or that or so on. But unconditional love is way different, and that means you first, I guess I'd say, we have to feel the love from our Creator. We have to know we are unconditionally loved. So that means that we're not searching or hungry for love from other human beings who have issues just like we do, and agendas as well. So when you fill yourself with Creator's love, you can love others unconditionally. That's how it works. That's how I see it.
Yeah, and then you know, I've told the story about standing in front of my own personal family at a funeral. You know, sometimes you see things like disasters, like what happened with the hurricanes and, you know, the fire disasters and all that kind of stuff, and you see the people rallying at the worst of times, and they bring food, they bring water and blankets and clothes, and the donations just come pouring in from the hearts around the world. My question to my own personal family is, why it takes a tragedy to put this world together, to bring our family back together? Why? Why can't you do that in the best of times? I hate getting emotional, but doggone it.
It's okay. I mean, you know, I feel what you're... I know what you're talking about, you know. But you know what also seems to me, like when there's tragedy that happens in the world, people come together. They come out of their little box, and they reach out, and they step up, and they come together as humanity should, you know. It is sad that we have to wait till some tragedy. I guess that's just part of the program here, is that people are so distracted and people are so in the survival mode and worry mode and fear mode. And it takes a lot to reach out and keep that energy of family and friendship and caring going, especially when you're inundated with all the, you know, the particular mainstream media assault upon the, and the bringing out the terrorism and the madness and the fears and all that. So that's what people are experiencing, you know?
Yep. And then it's terrible that, you know, it's too late to tell somebody you love them when you put them in the ground.
That's for sure. Oh, yeah.
So all we're saying, do a preemptive strike on starvation. Do a preemptive strike on homelessness. Go out there, find those materials that companies are wasting and ask them, hey, you know, if you're not going to, if you're just going to send that to the dump anyway, can I take this and help some people with it, you know? Man, we waste so much here in the United States of America, and I'm sure it happens worldwide, but we waste so much. And it's a shame, because there's a lot of materials out there. If you think just along the plastic bottle side of things, if you look, there's actual documentation out there, documentaries about an island floating in the ocean of plastic bottles, trash that just kind of got washed out to sea, or even things that during the tsunami in Japan washed things across. There's stuff laying everywhere. There's this one place they call Paradise Beach, and it's just loaded down with trash, and they turned that trash into a treasure. They made an economy out of it. It's possible, folks. It really is possible. Like Patty said earlier, we got all the solutions. We got everything we need. It's right there before us. And instead of waiting around for a doggone tragedy to occur, we could start resolving things when the good times are coming around. That's the best time, I think, to get prepared. What do you guys think?
Yep. Yep. I've got one of my writings that are really apropos to what we're talking about today, and I want to read that out for my closing, Shaziz, if I could.
All right, it's that time anyway. You want to go ahead and do that?
Okay. I wrote this some, 15 years ago, Shaziz, and this is the thing that... This is still as valid as it was then, even more so now. And these are the writings when I am within my quiet self and my ancestors speak with me and share their wisdoms. These are not my wisdoms. These are just the words that are given me. And I just want to read this out. This is from my writings of Turtle Wisdom, which is the wisdom of the great turtle that we live on, that I've learned. So I'll begin. This is a time of great change. This is a time of coming together. This is a time for all relations to remember who and where we come from. For many years, I have walked across the Great Turtle Island, seeking the wisdoms and lessons of my relations. Always, I have listened to and followed the path of the Creator, and in this, I have and continue to be blessed. Now I feel it is time to share that which I have learned with those who will hear, not because I have learned all that can be taught. If I lived to be 1,000 years old, there would still be more left unlearned at my time of passing than all I could hope to learn in this momentary existence called life. But because I see a great capacity for our race to heal or destroy that which sustains us, we stand at this moment upon a crossroads. The path we choose to take will determine not only our life, but the lives of every living thing that shares this earth we call home. It is time to open your eyes. Look around you. See your relations. Understand your connection to the true family, the one family. We must find the courage to see through the hate, jealousy, and apathy that has silently filled our lives. There is no enemy that sits at your doorstep, except those you choose to create. It is always within your power to make peace with your relations, to find compassion and empathy for those you see now as less than you. Look beyond yourselves. See the needs of your brothers and sisters. Do not deny aid to those around you. Bring them gifts of love, understanding, compassion. Teach all that you meet to see the beauty of life, not in words, but in actions. Words are no more than a leaf on the wind, which passes before us and then is gone. It is the walk we walk that remains in one's heart. If we give love, if we offer help to those in need, then we give lasting hope and the courage to meet one's own destiny. No one is alone. All actions, good or bad, continue onward. Do not live your life by the words of others or determine your worth by the things you possess. There is no possession that remains. All things pass. Only you can change what is within. There is no material thing that can make you what you are. If you are unhappy, then look within yourself. Make peace with your own fears. Do not strike out at another for that which you create. Walk in honor. Pray always. Give thanks in all things. Know that you are the creator of your life, and that you will, that what you give is returned to you in kind. Look around you. See the beauty of creation as it is meant to be. Understand that life does not happen as you choose, but as it should be. Join with others and sing the songs of thanks and blessings, even in the darkest of times. There can be no beauty within your heart if you do not choose to see it with your eyes and hear it with your ears or speak it with your mouth. You determine your walk and strength of spirit. If you are weak, it is because you choose to be. If you cannot see the rainbow of life within yourself, it is because you choose the darkness. Your strength comes from the bond you share with all your relations. The Creator has made it so. Do not forget where you come from. Remember the connection you share. Draw strength from the great web of life. Welcome those who will come to you in need. Give freely of your heart, mind, and spirit. Together we are strong, and our beauty is shared throughout the universe as the light of creation. Make your life a walk of love. In this, you will always honor the Creator.
That was beautiful. And words of wisdom, and thank you very much for sharing that. You know, in my book of faith, it said that blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God.
We're going to end this show crying, I just know it.
Yeah.
You know, that, yeah, brought tears to my eyes, and wow, it's, I don't know if I can follow that one up. I just, I'm so grateful for being here, as always. It's, a beautiful gift, and I want to thank you, my sister Patty, and my brother Shaziz, and all others who are really opening their hearts and speaking their truths and doing the work to make this a better place for all people, especially the children and those who are, you know, really suffering. I just keep hearing the words, "There for the grace of God go I." And I've been close to the edge many times throughout my life. And it was the grace of my Creator. You can say God if you like, or I say Wankantanka, Great Spirit. Where I was really protected. And I saw things that no one should see. And I experienced things no one should experience. I know I'm not alone in this. You know, when you're alone, when you are lost,
love you, sis.
You know, I think of those people on the street. We're talking about that today. And if that shuts you down, I feel sad for you. I'd rather be sitting here crying about another brother or sister or child, because I've experienced, you know, close to what they're experiencing, and things I've experienced, like I said, nobody should experience. I know we've all had those times. And so I'd rather be crying here because my heart is open and because I'm feeling, you know, and I'm sensitive in that way. I feel others' pain and others' sorrow and fear, you know. So I just want to say, yeah, therefore, by the grace of God, go I. It could be you next. You know, I hope not, but I'm just saying we can't put ourselves above others, ignore the pain. It seems so much easier to do that, I guess, for a lot of people, and it is more hard. It is a challenge to reach out. But I guess I'm saying we all of us, everyone, I don't care what color you are, what your, you know, religion is, what your status is, everybody wants to be loved. We need love. You know, that's the key. I keep saying it, right?
Yeah.
So, the love is the key. And if you don't feel love, you got work to do. If you can't, I think you have work to do.
Well, Barbara, thank you for sharing your heart with the world.
Thank you.
I'm going to try to end this with a simple little concept. I posted a picture in the chat room, and in the picture it has a light bulb with a candle in the center of it, and the words on the picture says, "Seeking creative solutions to problems in our world is as simple as listening to one another and sharing great ideas. Power to the people." If you have one candle in the darkness, and the darkness can never win, and all I'm saying to everybody, just like a candlelight vigil around the world, everybody, light a candle when it's dark. Light it up. Light up the world with some love. You've been listening to me.
I just want to say an elder, one wise words of an elder long ago said, shine your light. That's all that counts.
Yep. Be that candle. Be that lighthouse on the stormy sea for those folks out there in need. Get out there and help somebody. You've been listening to the Knights of the Round Table. If you have an opportunity to share this podcast, we got frustrated and emotional and everything on this show today. It's been a roller coaster ride, ladies. Thank you for joining me. It's always an honor. I'm always humbled that you take your time and spend it with me, and it's a wonderful thing, and I want this for everybody. I want the world.
Ma'am, sorry. What knight lives in that castle over there?
I'm 37.
What?
I'm 37. I'm not old.
Well, I can't just call you man.
You could say Dennis.
I didn't know you were called Dennis.
Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?
I did say sorry about the old woman, but from behind you looked...
What I object to is you automatically treat me like an inferior.
Well, I am king.
Oh, king, eh? Very nice. And how'd you get that, eh? By exploiting the workers. By hanging on to outdated imperialist dogma which perpetuates the economic and social differences in our society. If there's ever going to be any progress...
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here. Oh! How'd you do?
How do you do, good lady? I'm Arthur, King of the Britons. Whose castle is that?
King of the who?
The Britons.
Who are the Britons?
Well, we all are. We are all Britons. And I am your king.
I didn't know we had a king. I thought we were an autonomous collective.
You're fooling yourself. We're living in a dictatorship. A self-perpetuating autocracy in which the working classes...
Oh, there you go, bringing class into it again.
That's what it's all about. If only people would...
Please, please, good people. I am in haste. Who lives in that castle?
No one lives there.
Then who is your lord?
We don't have a lord.
What?
I told you, we're an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Order? Who does he think he is?
I'm your king.
Well, I didn't vote for you.
You don't vote for kings.
Well, how'd you become king, then?
the Lady of the Lake. Her arm clad in the purest shimmering samite, held aloft Excalibur from the bosom of the water, signifying by divine providence that I, Arthur, was to carry Excalibur. That is why I'm your king.
Listen, strange women lying in ponds, distributing swords is no basis for a system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony.
Be quiet!
But you can't expect to wield supreme executive power just because some watery tart threw a sword at you.
Shut up!
I mean, if I went round saying I was an emperor, just because some moistened bint had lobbed a scimitar at me, they put me away.
Shut up! Will you shut up?
Ah, now we see the violence inherent in the system.
Shut up!
Oh, come and see the violence inherent in the system! Help, help, I'm being repressed!
Bloody peasant!
Oh, what a giveaway. Did you hear that? Did you hear that, eh? That's what I'm on about. Did you see him repressing me? You saw it, didn't you?
Camelot. Camelot. Camelot.
It's only a model.
Shh. Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
We're knights of the round table. We dance when we're able. We do routines to call the scenes to put quite impeccable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table. Our shows are more mid-table. So many times we give them rhymes that are quite unsingable. We're off the mad in Camelot. We sing from the dire Camelot.
I have to push the pram a lot.
Well, on second thoughts, let's not go to Camelot. It is a silly place.
Right.
Terrible, and the Knights of the Round Table.